I never asked for this.
I submitted forms in triplicate requesting specifically this.
I was fine with it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the first episode of Press X for Story. This is a new podcast from myself, Can't Wear Hats, and this is going to be about video game stories and narratives, rather than mechanical bits of, oh, this mechanic works, or this bit's a fun thing to do. We're going to look at narratives in games and the different ways they're presented, how effective they are, and discuss a different one every time, going back through the history of games, new games, all that sort of stuff. And there's not going to be a proper schedule to this. It'll be when we have an idea. So to start us off, we're going to start off with a fairly recent game, Deus Ex Mankind Divided. And for those who don't know, Deus Ex Mankind Divided is a sequel to Deus Ex Human Revolution, which itself is a prequel to the original Deus Ex game and Deus Ex Invisible War, starring Adam Jensen, augmented rights, and all that sort of stuff, which we will get into in the show. So, without further ado, let me bring in my co-hosts for this. And that's the other thing. Each episode will be joined by a different co-host or set of co-hosts. And today I have with me my frequent collaborator, Red Nightmare.
Hello.
And Navarin, what's up?
Hi there.
So, yeah, we're going to talk about Deus Ex Mankind Divided's story. And, well, I mean, we've all finished it now, first of all. We were sort of waiting, like, I was sort of waiting on the three of us to finish playing it.
I think everybody was waiting on me.
I mean, that's fair.
I may have finished it twice in the time it took Red to finish it.
It's probably a good idea.
So, yeah, I mean, the way we're going to do this is we are going to jump around various topics and what we thought of it rather than break it down, you know, plot-wise what happens. Mm-hmm. The idea behind this is to discuss what we liked and didn't like, or what worked and didn't work. And the idea is that this is going to, you know, involve spoilers for the game. This is
a lot of them.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them. So, yeah, either you're listening to this and you finish the game and maybe you want to hear what we think, or you're not bothered by that at all. So, yeah, there you go, just a heads up.
For those who haven't finished the game, I think it's good we go do a very quick summary of the plot, so we're up to speed on the generals.
Well, yeah, I mean, so it follows on from Human Revolution, where you basically, there's a massive worldwide augmented incident
that
they refer to constantly.
Which basically causes everybody who's augmented to go nutty and start attacking people.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were the previous game's enemies tricked all the people with augmentations into getting this special chip that made them go mad and start attacking everybody, and now everyone's scared of augmented people.
Yep.
So yeah, augmented people in Mankind Divided are an oppressed group worldwide. Yep. Like,
they're a catch-all group. Anything you the game wants to talk about, it could be racism, class divide, religion. Anything. The game's like, oh, augmented people are a good metaphor for that, and then just slots them in.
Yeah, very much so. God, yeah, that's a lot of what this game does. Is it takes augmented people and puts them in the molds for things that already exist.
And so the plot basically follows Adam Jensen, main character from the last game, who may or may not have died in your game.
Depending. They also do that, the similar thing of, like, Human Revolution had multiple endings you could choose, and then Mankind Divided is like, they all happened.
They didn't, but
that actually happened in the original sequel to the
Deus Ex. Like, Invisible War did the same thing. Yeah,
yeah. It's kind of a tradition.
It's a thing.
It's been done before in the series.
Yeah,
but yeah. What basically happens is that Jensen is now part of a international task force. Task Force 29. Sorry.
Yeah, he works for Interpol.
Interpol.
Yeah.
And
created in response to traditional law enforcement not being fast enough at dealing with crises in the new world.
And basically, there's an incident at a hotel. His task force gets ambushed by augmented extremists wearing masks.
Yeah,
gold masks.
Fancy.
Which sends Jensen on a basically worldwide trip to figure out who assaulted them. He uncovers plots to basically get the augmented human rights. No, sorry.
The Augmented Rights Coalition, the ARC.
The
ARC. ARC. that are being framed for terrorist attacks, who are framing them, why. That's basically what the plot revolves around.
I mean, you say world traveling, but basically it's Prague, the Swiss Alps, and London.
Golem City.
Yeah, Golem City.
Golem City, which is outside, just outside of Prague.
Yeah.
So it's not that far.
It's a very distinct place.
Yeah, very much so.
Also the Dubai.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, Dubai at the beginning.
It's basically Kowloon walled city, but
yeah,
just sci-fi.
Mm. So yeah, you have to go and uncover the plot and find out who's really behind it and stop them, and because they're going to strike again. And there's also a typical in Deus Ex games. There's a bunch of conspiracies of like who's in on it, who knows about this thing, and who's.
And it asks you at various points, basically. So who do you trust right now?
Yeah. So that's a very bare bones plot of the game. I mean, that's the thing I think we distinguish between like plot and narrative and so on. Plot is basically, you know, what happens.
Yeah.
It's like very simply like what we just described. But then there's a whole bunch of other stuff going on as how it's delivered. There's dialogue, there's other bits of narrative and so on. So, I mean, where to start with this? Because I think
a fun game.
Yeah, it is.
Yes.
Yeah,
actually, let's get that out,
get that out of the way. Like, I like the game. I'm gonna criticize it, some things about it. But overall, I had a lot of fun with it. You know, I played it through twice. It was at least good enough to hold my attention that long, and I enjoyed it.
Yes, but
that being said, there are lots of things that we can talk about that the game did well, and also didn't do well, and also maybe shouldn't have attempted.
Yeah. Yeah, mechanically it was a lot of fun, definitely. Yeah. I think
that's not what
all
this podcast is about.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. It's like mechanically it was a fun game. That's fine, but that's not what we're interested in.
Nope.
So let's actually just talk about what it's trying to, or the world that it's set in, the story it tries to tell through the world. Actually, this is something I want to praise: is the
Hell yes,
the environmental design and storytelling of Prague and and Golem City.
Wow.
Oh,
well, so actually, number one thing to point out: we lose the piss filter.
Right? Yeah, it's no longer
the human revolution. Like that's gone.
I'm sad.
it's like losing a friend.
Narratively, it's a clever design decision, because what it did was it took the sheen off of augmented, you know, people as a concept. It's the entire game environmentally has basically been set up to tell you augmentation used to be the preserve of the rich. Now it's, well, not solely the preserve of the rich, but it was much easier for rich people.
Yeah.
Now it's basically gone downhill, and it's lost all of its luster. It's something that you get, you know, the people who got forced into are now having to live with, and it's a real problem. Like, every limb clinic that you see in the game,
run
down,
destroyed.
It's like, the color palette inside is muted. Like, it's still the old black and gold color palette, but they're, like, washed out inside. It's really, the environment of the game tells you so much.
Also, just to give quick props to Prague's design as a city. It feels much more like a city than levels in the previous games, which helps you get immersed in the story. It feels like a real place where you are living.
To a certain degree.
To a certain extent, yeah. Not completely.
I mean, it depends how hard you poke it.
Yeah.
But what I also like is the... I don't know if you guys noticed this. I went back today and just walked around Prague for a bit.
Mm.
The city's actually split into two pieces. And those pieces are specifically the Og and non-Og districts. If you walk around them, you're like, this area is shit, and you go with the tram, and then the other area is pristine.
I didn't notice that.
I found out today. I was walking around, I was like, hang on a second, the part where Jensen's apartment is, everything is run down, everything is broken.
Yeah.
And then you go take the tram to the beyond the wall, basically, which you can't cross any other way.
Yeah, okay.
And that's, all that area is just, it's far heavily more guarded.
There are more checkpoints.
Neat and clean, and everything's.
Does that
place.
Still hold true when you get access to the red light district?
To some degree, yes. Mm. Like the red light district was, I mean, it wasn't as run down and shanty as Jensen's neighborhood.
And the other thing is, when you are in Prague, just walking around, you will see background examples of the augmented oppression that they are trying to, you know, get across. That this is what's happened to the world.
You'll see it all the time.
People getting held up at checkpoints, people getting, you know, beaten up by the police.
People arrested.
Yep, there are posters on the walls, all that kind of stuff.
somebody can actually get pulled out of an apartment in your building.
Yep.
And somebody else outside is making pictures of it.
And that ties into a lot of the way that the game was marketed. It basically says, you know, this is Prague. I mean, it's obvious they picked Prague for a reason. Like, they wanted to have a city with some religious symbolism, blah, 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 blah.
Mm.
But also they wanted a place which was sort of central and you could head out from.
Yeah. So all the environmental design in Prague, it helps you feel immersed in this story, in this world. But there is a limit to that because so it's trying to tell a story of augmented oppression and, I mean, what they called it in marketing more than anything else was mechanical apartheid.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get dropped in there as Jensen, you're living in this apartment, and you wander around Prague. As with anything in these games, you're experiencing most of this secondhand.
Yeah.
Because you're the player, you know, you have to try and get immersed in the character. But if you do, if you say you put yourself in Jensen's head properly, Adam Jensen lives in a pretty nice apartment.
Oh, it's lovely.
A lovely apartment. And
the apartment is great.
And he has basically his super duper augmented Jesus.
Yes.
He has a trench coat made by Acronym, and they go to great lengths in the game to inform you that he had it specially ordered because, yeah, you know, it's custom tailored to him.
He's incredibly privileged, and just taking a step outside his door puts him in an apartment complex where there's a couch with a dumpster bag on top of it, 3 steps from the front door.
So clearly by the environmental design, they're trying to get this story across of, you know, augmented oppression. But Jensen's character is one that is extremely privileged.
He stands apart from the rest.
Yeah.
He's immune to it.
Yeah. But, I mean,
In many ways.
Yeah, because, I mean, from the last game, we know he doesn't need neuropazine, which already sets him apart.
Yeah, neuropazine being a drug that prevents augmentations from
being rejected. Yeah,
it was a big deal in Human Revolution. You'd keep coming across people that were in need of neuropazine. They'd be like, "Oh man, I need some nopals or whatever they called it." and that was a thing. Like, you generally have to deal with them you have to knock them out or whatever, because they'd be breaking into people's apartments trying to get this drug. Mm. There was basically a storyline where you'd have to choose whether to allow one of your coworkers to continue smuggling neuropazine out to people who need it.
Oh, I remember
Or turn them in.
Mm.
But the whole time, you're immune to that because your physiology is such that you do not require this drug. And no one believes you when you tell them this.
I find that to be a realistic thing in the game.
It's easily provable. Like, you could just, you know.
Yeah, but he never bothers to do that.
No, he doesn't. So Jensen is generally just being a dick, because he could go to a hospital and say, "I am the cure for this reliance on this drug. Could you maybe help
me? Maybe do something with that."
Yeah.
Yeah. So he didn't ask for this.
No. There we go. We got that in.
24 minutes. I had 28.
Yeah.
Damn it.
So yeah, the point that I'm getting at is that Jensen already, just by that fact, is outside of all of this. And then it's added on to in Mankind Divided with all the augmented oppression that's supposedly been happening and that you see happening around you, but it doesn't happen to Adam Jensen.
No. Aside from if you take the wrong card.
Well, no, it doesn't. So that's relevant.
Well, because if you take it, so to get around Prague, different areas, you take the underground. And there are segregated cars. So you can.
Yes.
There's one for augmented people, and the rest is for non-augmented people.
It's very clearly trying to evoke some sort of 60s-style apartheid.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You can't ride on the front of the bus. You're augmented. You have to go at the back.
Basically, yeah.
And Jensen gets to do that. Like, he's like, right, well, you're the player. You can make a choice which one to go in.
Mm.
And he can choose to go in the non-augmented car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Naturals.
Yeah. Natural. So, if you do that, when you come out the other end, there's a guard who's like, "Hey, what are you doing? You're not. Don't do it again." And looks at your papers.
He checks your papers, and basically his Interpol license says, "Like, no, you just do it."
Yeah, I have a permit. This just says I can do what I want. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of the times when guards read your permit, they react. They're like, "Oh God! Oh, okay, right. I don't want to mess with this guy because he's got augmented stuff that can like kill me by accident." You know, like
if he blinks wrong, my head might explode.
Yeah, Jensen has military grade tech. In fact, he has above military grade tech that is hugely illegal. Like, he is a walking gun. Mm-hmm. And he has a universal license to open carry as soon as someone asks him. Like, he can go anywhere with a gun, and no one can.
With, like, six guns up his left arm. Or exactly. You know, it's like.
He is a walking cluster bomb. That's not a joke.
The typhoon system. Yeah.
So the guards react to you. They're like, "Oh God, I have to, you know, I can't mess with this guy. Whoa, whoa. Just don't do it again. All right, I'm leaving." and that it makes what could have been something really interesting into just a, "Hey player, you're awesome."
And it also means that the only effect of taking the wrong cart is a very short cutscene at the end of your journey, and you can do it as many times as you want.
Nothing happens.
Like, so here's what also something we're probably going to do is hypothesize about what could be improved. But like, what would have been nice is if you did it too many times, you got thrown in jail or something. It's like, we warned you about this. You're going in there overnight.
Or basically, you can't go to your main objective until you've passed by Miller to get a stern talking to.
Yeah. Exactly. Stern talking to.
So that means that Jensen feels somewhat removed from this world that they're trying to tell the story in.
And it gets even worse when you go in, when the orchid comes into play and Jensen gets stabbed by that. It's
right.
Like he's fine.
Well, and the orchid being a drug that kills people.
Yeah.
It's a poison and it's basically, it seems to like force people's orgs to get rejected.
Or
something.
It doesn't because they eat it on non-augmented.
Right, it also kills them as well.
That was my first thought. I was like, hang on. Oh, of course, he can't have his orgs rejected. That's why he's immune.
They tell you what it does. It sends the genes that reject orgs into overdrive.
Ah.
Basically, that's the I'm simplifying it. They kind of hand-wave explain it. I know it doesn't work that way, but the basic explanation is that it activates part of the human DNA structure sequence that rejects orgs, and that kills a person somehow. It's confusing.
Like, I was going to say, that's weird because it's also used on non-augmented people. Like,
yeah, they do say, we reckon it's probably an everyone killer, and it is. Because whatever they're doing screws everyone else up.
Yes, it does. It was designed, I think, as a way of controlling orgs, but they were like, when they ended up with it, this is all conjecture. But I'm assuming they were like, oh, this is useful. Because basically, if you played the original Deus Ex, you know that they were coming up with a bio plague to enact their plans for world domination, and it follows logically that the research started here is culminated in that.
Right.
Interesting.
But yeah, to the point of getting it, like, Jensen is this badass super spy. He's augmented James Bond, basically.
Yes.
Yes.
And so, trying to tell a story about augmented oppression, it can make it fall flat because Jensen doesn't experience any of it firsthand, or hardly any of it.
I think what I would have liked is, I would have liked the game, characters in the game to be discriminating against you specifically, and not just to throw away a remark while you pass somebody in the street.
Yeah.
No, actually be that a thing in a mission. It's like, you have this whole thing up, you're like, okay, I need to go to this guy, you're an Ogg, fuck you, go away.
Yeah, or something like, we're working with the Prague police on this, and they're like, they don't want you on the mission, Jensen, because you're augmented.
Yeah.
Because it means that you have to experience all of it. That not only are you experiencing all the oppression and so on secondhand as the player, because you always will in anything like this, because you are, you know, you're a player, that's how it works.
Yeah.
But Jensen is experiencing it secondhand as well.
Yeah, I think they could have told a lot more and shown a lot more by being like, this, you are now, even though secondhand, experiencing a form of
oppression.
Oppression.
Yeah.
Thanks. I didn't want to call it racism.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, they use a lot of the language and trappings, I don't want to say tropes, but of racism in fiction and in real life, which is, you know, the very, very, a lot of them are really obvious, like the segregated train cars. And there's, when you go into Prague train station for the first time, there is an augmented bathroom.
Yeah. The thing is, actually,
there's a bar that's
maybe
also
you guys can tell entrances. Me what you thought. Mm. Do you think your South African pilot is, like, referencing that at all?
I feel like it has to be, because
you mean his presence or what he says himself?
Every time a South African appears in films, games, whatever, it's usually because someone wants you to dislike someone because they want to reference apartheid in some way.
It's, yeah, I mean, that's typically, in fiction at least, in large-scale fiction, South Africans and apartheid are tied very closely together.
Yeah, like, they're a very obvious trope. They're kind of...
But not, it's, you know, it's not always the case, but it is, when these things are brought up, that's typically why they're there. Like, yeah. So the thing with Chicane, right, he's a black South African man, and he's your pilot. So they advertise the game with mechanical apartheid. I don't remember it coming out actually too much in the game, that terminology.
I don't think the word is ever really uttered.
No, but you have this South African guy as your pilot, so you can't help but think of that if you've been following the marketing for the game, which is, you know, fairly likely. And he never mentions actual apartheid. They never talk about it. It's just his presence there of like, hey, look, a South African guy, mechanical apartheid, right?
And he doesn't really like you all that much. And I mean, he's, for somebody who had his leg basically wrecked in the AUK incident, he seems to be, it's like he's forgiven the man that did it to him.
Yeah.
But it's still like, could we mention the thing we're trying to talk about? Or is it just like a big no-no to say the thing we are actually talking about?
So here's probably a good time to reference the marketing that you talked about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did effectively, I can't really phrase this differently, they engaged the language of Black Lives Matter.
Yes, they're by saying AUG Lives Matter.
No, which... no, by saying AUG's Lives Matter.
Right, that was
grammar's
it.
Important.
Yeah, they didn't use
I mean, there are other more important things at work here, but you also must get your grammar correct.
Yes. So number one problem, appropriating of you know, a cultural phenomenon that's, you know, maybe slightly more important than your video game.
Yeah,
maybe?
Yeah.
Number two, grammar.
Yes. I find this interesting because one of the designers of Andre Vu mentioned that the phrase was coined before the movement started and stated that it was an unfortunate coincidence.
I mean, that's...
And
like,
so they invented that, did they?
Apparently.
No. That's such bullshit. Okay. Like, I'm sorry. Sorry.
And even if they did, I'm like, guys...
And they didn't.
did you watch the news? Like, did your marketing at any point watch the news between the moment you made that and the moment it came out and think... Maybe that's not a good idea.
So this is a classic thing with Square Enix properties. Jim Sterling's done a lot of good stuff about this. They seem desperate at the moment for anything. They are cutting up all of their games wherever they can into episodic content to make more money.
We'll get to that on
this
game in a moment.
But yeah, so this just smacks of that desperation of we have to get people talking about our game. What can we do? Oh, I know. Oh, I've got an awful idea.
We have to keep it relevant, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah, but to do it in the worst way possible, which is, you know, appropriating a actually important, very important cultural movement.
I'd call it co-opting.
Co-opting, yeah. Okay, yeah, that's a good word for it, yes. So, you know, going into the game, having been exposed to that, you think, well...
I had my doubts about buying it because of that, actually.
You expect it to tackle some of those issues.
Yeah,
that's the main thrust of it.
Right.
Like, that's what that marketing says to you. It says, we are going to talk about this stuff.
Yeah, you get that impression of like, okay, so they're going to mention, you know, real-world racism and, you know, apartheid and parallels. They're going to make parallels. It's like...
And they're going to make a statement, maybe, even.
Right, yeah. This story and this, you know, mechanical apartheid, all this stuff is going to have a point.
Yes.
Right? It's going to have a point it's trying to make. Like all good sci-fi that tackles these issues, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there's episodes of Star Trek, even when they're the cheesiest ones with, you know, the original series, the people who are black on one side and white on the other side, and then white on one... You know, it's cheesy and it's dumb, but it's actually trying to make a point, and they reference those examples, and like, we think we've come so far, but then look at this.
And I'd argue Star Trek was a bit more on the nose with it. It's like, can't overlook it in that one. You could, if you didn't, I mean, it's hard to believe you don't know about this, but there are people that aren't, you could easily overlook that in this game, the parallels.
Yeah, like, there's a point at which you're playing through the game and you realize that, wait, this game isn't trying to make a point.
It comes much later than you'd expect, because the game opens with a train station exploding.
Oh, yeah, and God,
like that... There's an intro mission first. It's just to get... It's like a tutorial.
It's a tutorial mission,
It's a fun tutorial, to be fair.
It's okay.
It's good. It gives you an idea of what this game's going to play like. But then you're talking to a person that you met. Jensen clearly knows them.
Mm.
And then a train station explodes. And yes. That's pretty on the nose, like, I mean, with that, the real, like, world parallels.
Ripped from the headlines almost, you mm-hmm. know.
And it tells, and that's, in my mind, that was like, oh wow, you know, this game's going to go into some moral ambiguity about who's right and who's wrong and whether, you know, where how far people get driven to do this kind of thing.
You can have Jensen say that.
But they never get there. Like, it never comes up. Like, all this stuff happens that they set themselves up for all of this development, I'm going to call it, of ideas that they've got. Like, and it gives them the perfect example. It's like, well, you know, to use a very tragic real-world example, there was a very unfortunate shooting near to a protest that was going on in the real world in America. And the two things got very conflated. And that's kind of what Jensen is trying to find out from the majority of this. He's like, oh, was it the Augmented Rights Coalition that did this, or was it some splinter faction of them? Mm-hmm. And the whole time he's doing that, the question is never asked, well, these people are clearly being discriminated against and have literally no other options, so
yeah,
is it actually that bad?
Yeah, you can have Jensen argue that point at some point. I think it's...
Not in a meaningful way.
No, just in a conversation.
There are points at which you can engage basically with the leaders of various factions like ARC and other people. You can engage them in a discussion, but it's basically, it's like, you know, that doesn't justify what you did, all of these things. The thing is, I'm thinking of the guy who's the leader of ARC at the end of Golem City.
Talos Rucker.
Yep, Rucker.
So you can, those topics come up, but it's part of essentially a dialogue-based boss fight.
Yes.
Yes.
And the way these things work is that, you know, your augments can tell his personality and you can choose the best responses for that. And this comes back to what this is something you were talking about, I think, before we started recording, Nav, is that there is therefore a correct way to go through that dialogue chain.
Yes, absolutely. It's the one, like, you get the most XP when you correctly pick all of the... Like, let's back it up a sec. That's an augment that you can activate.
Right.
It's called the KC mod, the social org is for short. It's CASIE, I can't remember what it stands for. But basically, when you activate that, loads of conversations in the game take on a new relevance because you see people's react in one of three ways. People react in one of three personality type ways. Or sometimes all three, sometimes just one.
Yeah.
And you have to pick the best response for what traits they've showed to date. But what that generally means is instead of listening to what they're saying and coming up yourself with a coherent argument as to why that might be incorrect, you're actually just watching the screen to see, oh, okay, A happened. Okay, that's a B.
Yeah.
That's two Bs. Right. Yeah. And now that's a C. So I've got one A, two Bs, and one C. So okay, there's another B. So I will select answer B. I have no idea what I just said or why.
Yeah, no, and you can ignore it entirely and just...
Usually, you know. I prefer the system without the ABC system because it basically shows three traits of the person. Like, if they're acting like this, you should do this. And you need to listen to what they're saying. What are these three things are they doing right now? And then choose the correct response. Even that is more interesting. I kind of feel bummed. I actually grabbed the case.
It was identical in Human Revolution.
Yes.
It was identical.
Same system.
The blips.
Well, no, it was slightly different in that you did have the blips, but you could basically exude a pheromone at the very end to basically override whatever choices you made.
You can still do that sometimes.
Yeah. What I liked about that is that you could just go through the entire conversation making note of the ABCs, but still try to convince them with words. And then if you knew, okay, this is not going to work, then still choose, like, okay, I'll use this pheromone and just sidestep it anyway. That was more fun, I think.
And so what that means is that you talk to a person and there is a correct set of dialogue choices to give to them.
Yes.
I believe the game varies them.
It did
in the previous one.
Okay.
In Human Revolution, it switched them up from time to time.
There's also, like, there's best, second best, and wrong one. Because there were moments where I differed from what I saw Hats doing because I didn't want to tell somebody that I was with Interpol.
It gives you a level.
Yeah.
And the level has, like, basically three stages. It's, like, unconvinced, unsure, and convinced. And you can drop it back down to unconvinced and then put it back up in a different way, and it'll be fine.
So if you use that, which, you know, if you're trying to play the game and it leaves it up to the player to be like, do I want to use this augment to get through this the correct way, or do I want to, you know, stumble in blindly and try and figure it out? But mm-hmm. it means that, you know, you end up being led, if you use it, you end up being led through the dialogue in one particular direction. Yeah. So any discussion you have, you don't necessarily get to make that choice on what to answer.
It's a mechanical aspect of the game, actively removing roleplay as a feature of, you know, the player's experience.
Yes.
Yeah, or at least making roleplay clearly the incorrect choice.
Yeah.
Some of the time. And so that means that you remove the player from the narrative. Because mm-hmm. that's something else that video games do or can do and do differently from any other form of narrative, is that they put you in the driver's seat.
Mm.
So you can, you know, work your way through it and, oh, my guy did this thing and I went with this decision. Whereas in those cases, it's like, well, you don't get to make those choices. Well, you can make those choices, but these ones are wrong.
Yeah.
And also the method, I actually entirely disagree with the method by which Mankind Divided displays its choices. So in Deus Ex, the original game in 1999, there's a section of the game where you are in a hotel, there are men in black coming, there's an assault team about to attack you, the room you're in. You're with your brother. He is injured, like, he's unable to escape, and he says, just go, you know, get out of here. They're coming for us both. You need to leave and complete the mission you're on. You know, blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah. First time I played that game through, I was like, oh, man, that's really, you know, that's really sad. And I jumped out the window and ran away down the street and sneaked away. Then I talked to my brother, and he was like, oh, yeah, so I set up a trap for the guys coming in, killed them all and saved my brother. And I was like, what? You can do what?
Yeah.
I love that.
I thought that was amazing. Whereas Mankind Divided literally pops up on your screen, you have two options. Pick one of them.
Yeah, call this person or call this person.
or go save this person or go save that person.
Or save this person or go break into a bank.
Yeah.
Like, save that person?
That one is actually still labeled go save this person or go save that person. It just happens later.
Yeah.
So yeah, like the player's freedom in Deus Ex, in Mankind Divided, and I think it's certainly in Mankind Divided, and I think to the same extent in Human Revolution, is mostly based around how you approach a mission. It's whether or not you go stealthy or loud or
lethal,
you know, whatever.
Non-lethal.
Your dialogue choices are actually relatively limited.
So let's talk about a branching example in the game. Hats, I know you did the opposite to me in this.
Yes. Yeah.
The option that it presents you with, where it says, right, time is limited. Mm-hmm. You need to either rob a bank and get this thing to, you know, to continue on our mission, or go help this. Basically, as an operative, your mission is go and arrest this crazy bomb-making person.
Yeah. That might actually die.
But her father is like begging you, like, oh, please, she is in trouble, go and help her, save her. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, because the way I logic this out, it will not be the way that everyone did, but at the time, basically, in order to progress with the investigation that Jensen is currently on, you have to go to the bank.
Yeah, because basically your impetus to go on the mission to save the bomb maker is from the bomb maker's dad, and
the fact that she might know where the bombs came from.
Yeah,
yeah, and that's
ask them.
That's the mission that you're technically on as assigned by Interpol. Like mm-hmm. that's what they tell you to do. In order to unlock the greater conspiracy, the implication is heavily that you need to go to the bank, because otherwise these people are going to get away with it, effectively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'll never have the chance to... They'll disappear into the shadows, and you'll never be able to stop them in their global conspiracy ever again. Mm-hmm. That's the impression I got, anyway. Also, while you're there, you get an antidote to the poison, the orchid. You find an antidote to the orchid, and that becomes relevant later. So I went to the bank, I found the antidote, you hear the father, you know, getting all upset and angry and telling you that his daughter's gone. And I never actually went to see what happened, but I went afterwards and had a look around, and there's all these people, like, standing in this big pillar, and they're all dead.
Yep.
Right. So what happens on the other side is, if you go to save the bomb maker, you go there, and basically she's part of a religious group who worship the machine god. And
all one word.
Machine God, all one word. Which actually does tie into the original Deus Ex, which I like. And basically her and her followers are going to upload themselves into the Matrix and become a single consciousness. That's their...
surpass their
physical
flesh,
physical form and, yeah. You know. But she's also been making bombs for the, I guess, for the group who's been, actually, who blew up the train station. And I think there are some other incidents because...
Splinter Group in Ark,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, right. And because her brother is Marchenko, who is basically the guy in charge of that.
Brother, not as in familial.
Does she mean? She means brother,
yeah,
like
as in Og brother.
Oh, right,
Og,
yeah,
that
okay.
Makes sense.
Yeah, that was unclear, but yes, or
brethren.
They're you know working together, and so you go there and you can take her out or you can talk her down. If you talk her down, you get a device that can disarm the bombs.
Which also becomes relevant later.
And Interpol basically busts in and clears everybody out of the place. And so the people who are going to be uploaded, they get taken down from the thing and just all get arrested and taken away.
They don't die.
No, they don't. So those are the two options that are presented to you. You think, okay, so those are two very different missions. So if you do the bank, you don't get a bomb jammer. If you do the bomb maker, you don't get a cure for Orchid.
So this is my question. When I did the last mission, which is where this becomes relevant, the bomb jammer never came up.
I was wondering about that.
Like, yeah. It never happened. What
my,
occurs
my question
when you've got
is,
the jammer?
When you go, I need to ask you something. Oh, yeah. When you walk into Marchenko, does he blow up the building on the other side?
No. Well,
then why?
I think there's a time limit. And if you are too late, then he blows it up. But I was apparently quick enough that I did it without him blowing anything up.
I'm assuming that because I had the jammer. And once you, right before the start, you get the option to fight him or use the jammer.
Yeah, and that has a timer ticking down. And so you hit that, and then he's like, hey, you're not blowing anyone up today, Marchenko. And then you go into the boss fight.
Yeah.
Because so that means that in your games, the director died.
Yes. Miller is super dead.
Yeah.
Because I saved him. And it gives you a choice about that. And the only way that that's a relevant choice is if there is a second game where you need that antidote for someone else. But in this game, in the episodic content that it is, there is no reason not to give it to him because everyone else is fine.
The same in the fight against Marchenko. There's no reason not to use the jammer.
So why would that be a choice?
Well, yeah, it's like, so you can stand over Miller with the cure and be like, you know what? No, fuck you. I'm not giving you the cure.
You can. And like, you actually establish over the course of the game that there is someone in Task Force 29 who is, you know, a mole for the conspiracy people.
Yep.
For the Illuminati,
You find out it's not Miller.
Yep. Yeah. And
but that does lead to a really clever bit, because if you played the first game, you know Joseph Manderly is the guy who is in charge, who is a bad guy. But also, Miller's first name starts with a J as well, so they're both initials JM. Mm. And you find an email that is signed, it's like, I'm a bad guy, ha 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 ha. But it's signed JM.
JM.
Oh.
So it could be Manderly or Miller, and you don't know at that stage who it's from.
That's nice.
Yeah. But so, like, these two very divergent choices that you get at that earlier stage seem to only determine whether or not Miller dies.
Yeah. Which might be relevant in the sequel.
Yeah. Nothing else.
But that's... It gives you these choices, or rather the illusion of choice, but the story it tells is still extremely linear.
Which, to some degree, I'm okay with, because games can... I mean...
I don't know. I think if you're going to tell...
Splinter so much.
Yeah, but if you're going to tell a linear story, don't pretend that I'm making relevant decisions.
Yes, exactly that.
Fair
like,
point.
Like Mass Effect.
That's a separate podcast.
Yeah,
that's
a
whole other thing.
You need to get Nav on that. He has opinions.
I have lots of them.
I disagree
on your
with
note
him,
of it actually not giving you any choices, you know, can we talk about Gollum City?
Yes, let's do that.
Yes, please.
So Gollum City, really interestingly, Mankind Divided does this so well. It references things that have a greater meaning and then ignores that meaning completely.
So Gollum City is basically a slum city for the augmented.
Yes, it's named after the Gollum, the proto-mechanical being brought to life by Rabbi Loeb to protect the Jews of Prague.
Oh!
Yeah.
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 I did not know that.
No, it's real. It's subtle. It's there. It's clever. So sort of textually, the world is like, I have all of this amazing information. Look at me, and then you get there, and the game doesn't do anything with that.
Nope.
So to talk about the marketing again, just quickly, there's a very in-your-face bit where there's like four policemen around. They are kicking some augmented person in Gollum City.
Oh, right.
And that's in all the trailers.
Yes.
And you walk up to it in the game, and Jensen's just like, "Eh, I could interfere in this. I don't have to."
I mean, you as character, you could, I guess.
Again, it puts that decision in the player's hands. Because you could walk up to them and like press Q and knock out the policeman if you wanted
to. That's a bad idea because you have the entire police force on your ass with that.
Exactly. Like so.
Mechanically, you can just run away and then they'll forget about you.
It's hard. I prefer it if you see it happening in an isolated corridor
or like an alleyway, and you can like
nobody's watching.
Well, as Hats found out, when you do like
you do that.
Decide to knock someone out. Apparently, no one notices as long as they weren't in line of sight at the time. I'll come back to this later, but it's basically the game dangling a thing in front of you and saying, "Look, you could do this thing that was in all of our trailers, but it's up to you."
Even in the trailer, there's a beautiful piece of narrative because the kid that is being beaten up is the same person that blows himself up in the other part of the trailer, and it's overlapping. And what it's basically alluding at is these people that you saved. That were clearly oppressed, this is what happened. They were forced into extremism, or at least
they fought back.
Yeah, they fought back in a way that is, it is terrorism,
awful.
And it's awful because a lot of innocent people died. And it's like, you're like, it's horrible what they did, and I can't blame them.
That's a really interesting moral quandary. Like,
yes.
Do you step in or don't you? But the game never implies that in any way. The trailers do.
Yep.
Yeah, like, it's a lot of setup of, like, we're going to grapple with these themes and so on, and then you get in there and it does. And...
Also in the trailer and the game, something about Adam being apart from everybody else and being Jesus, there's a moment where he holds a hand of a dying woman, especially in the trailer, or reaches for it, and it's basically that image of God touching man.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, you're... not being very subtle about it, but...
Look, for a bit of backstory, Deus Ex has never, ever been subtle about the biblical allegories. First of all, it's called Deus Ex.
Yeah.
Yes. Second of all, J.C. Denton is the protagonist of the first game.
Yeah.
J.C. and his brother Paul.
Yeah. J.C.
J.C., right? And now you have Adam Jensen. Adam... like he's the guy who doesn't reject augments.
Yeah,
he's the first man, right? Yeah. So they're never subtle about
that. On that note, actually, this is a quick aside. The original Deus Ex is all about government conspiracies and about like fighting the powers that be, the government. The new ones, A Human Revolution and Mankind Divided, are much more about corporations and fighting corporate conspiracies. Like the enemies have shifted, which is an interesting thing just to note.
I feel that also ties into our current image of the world.
I think that's definitely a cultural thing. And some people may say, like, well, corporate conspiracy and government conspiracy, what's the difference?
I mean, that in and of itself says something.
So the good guys in the original Deus Ex are actually a splinter faction called the NSF, who fight the government with their guns, like good old Southern boys. And their motto is smash the state.
Oh, right, yeah, that does come up.
The first password you can get to on a terminal is smash the state in the game. And they call back to Deus Ex in Mankind Divided, actually, where the keypad code for the first keypad you come across is the same as the first keypad code in Deus Ex, the original.
Nice.
But yeah, there's just that shift that happened. And I thought that was relevant, because yes, it is how the world is viewed today. It's different. But to go back to Gollum City quickly, it's a very interesting place.
Oh, yeah.
There's lots of amazing graphical work.
I loved Gollum City. Gollum City was great. Like,
there's little stories. There's tiny stories being told all over the place by the environment.
Like, we praised Prague earlier for its environmental design, but Gollum City is even better and even more detailed, and you can see so many little stories just from being there and looking around. And I was talking before about how Jensen experiences all the augmented oppression secondhand by being Adam Jensen. But when you get to Gollum City, it's much harder to ignore because it's everywhere.
Yeah, and he's left his Interpol card back in Prague. Mm. Yeah, so he doesn't have that get-out-of-jail-free card.
It never really materializes.
No, it could have done.
It was more to the forefront than it was in Prague, so mm-hmm. I felt it did a better job, but it still could have been better than that.
And what I also liked is that when you get in, you're mostly at the bottom, and you can't see the sky. Yeah. And as you work your way up to the higher areas where Talos Rucker is, at some point, I remember stepping out of an elevator, looking up, and being like, holy shit, I can see the sky now.
Yeah.
Mm.
The people below me can't.
Yeah, it's very metaphorical in that regard. Yeah.
But then when you get up, like, let's skip on, when you get up there and talk to Rucker, conversationally, you convince him to come along with you, or you don't.
Mm. He dies anyway.
Either way, like, it's the thing, it's another example of the game giving you a theoretical option and then taking it away because their plot moves forward no matter what you do. On the train, woo-woo, railroad.
It's the illusion of choice. It's like...
Yeah. And so here's the bit particularly that annoyed me about that. It's a double whammy where, personally, I was a complete ghost for that section. Nobody saw me. I didn't knock anyone out. I didn't kill anyone. I wasn't even spotted.
Nice.
For the entirety of that section. And I got to Rucker, and I was like, right, you're coming with me. And he agreed. And I didn't even use the org that much. I convinced him just by what I thought would be right to say. And then the game took that away from me. So I sneaked out. I jumped out the window and sneaked away. No one saw me. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, these guys with guns are running towards me, firing, while I'm getting to my extraction chopper. I'm like, where did you come from?
Yeah. That's something else that I think that... What that is that's, again, that's an example of gameplay and story segregation, to use an unfortunate term. But it's like, again, it's like you have this way that you're playing the game, and then when the cutscene, you know, that they've already written is like, it assumes that you've played it another way, or it just...
Or it takes the direction that is most likely.
Yeah, so it's like, I've been a complete sneaky person. Now everyone's shooting at you. Run, Jensen. It's weird because for me, I was sort of fighting my way out of there at that point, so it made sense. But yeah, if you're stealthy, then it's like suddenly everybody has discovered you somehow.
I had a similar thing where at some point Prague goes into lockdown, which, by the way, I love, because suddenly the area that was safe is suddenly hostile to you.
It's a pain in the butt to move around.
Oh, yes, that...
It is till you knock everyone the fuck out.
Yeah, they never get up again. They're sleeping. It's okay. They're unconscious. Being unconscious doesn't cause you any problems, right?
Don't have brain damage.
It's fine.
I know what you're about to say, and I did the same thing. Like, I sneaked through back to Task Force 29, and then Arya said to me, "Well, why'd you attack those people?" And I was like,
"Actually, I thought it was because I got spotted at one point."
No,
it's like everyone, and it's like, "Wait, why did you engage the police?" I didn't engage the police. They didn't do anything.
Saw me.
I just left.
Yeah.
No, even if you don't touch them, she still says, why did you engage the police? And then you justify the fact that you did something without actually having done it.
Yeah, there wasn't I was surprised there wasn't even a no
it's like,
option.
What? No, I didn't do anything.
No. Shit are you talking about?
No,
she doesn't have to believe me, that's fine.
It's a very obvious part of the game where they expect you to have been spotted or to have, you know, punched out some policemen. Yeah. And they're like, oh, we'll have a character ask them why they did that. And then they can be like, I am the player, I justify it.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's like, I didn't do anything. I maybe should have.
Yeah.
Back on it.
Well, I mean, if you were going to admonish me for it anyway, I should have knocked everybody out.
That's why after that I went outside and knocked them all the fuck out.
It's like, well, I don't want to make you into a liar. Yeah. But that's what we were talking about before, is that the game... It gives you the illusion of choice, but then because you approach the mission in a certain way, and then afterwards people act as if you did it another way, or the way that the story is expecting to go. And there's nothing wrong with telling a linear story; that can work very well in a number of games. But it's the idea that you have some effect on how it plays out is an important thing in video games.
And even if it's just like. I'd be okay with it if it matters to what happens to a side character and I meet them later again. Like, that's fine. But don't give me, like you said with Miller, don't save a person that doesn't get brought up at all. Like, at least give me a little cutscene where he calls me. He's like, I'm so glad, and blah, blah, blah. Glad to see my husband.
Like, so glad I'm not dead. Yeah. Well, actually, I tell you what, there is an example of that actually happening. One point at which your choices do matter, and I'll bring that up. But so I don't know if you guys did this.
I know you didn't, Red.
But there's a side mission early on where you have to shut down basically a fake checkpoint.
Yes.
So you shut down the fake checkpoint, and you can, by doing that, you meet a forger called Milena, and she's basically been held by these gangsters who are basically running a extortion racket, and, like, you know, if you want to get through, you have to buy these really expensive papers and so on.
They're extortionate.
Yeah, so you can get her out of that. And then she's like, look, I want you to do something for me. I'm going to help you. There are two people I want to help. And so here are the passes for them. Get the passes to them. And you have to go activate them at this office somewhere. And so you go...
Office, basically.
Yeah, so you go there. And then you get there, it's broken down. And it's like, oh no, only one of the machines is working. And it'll only work once, so you have to choose who you save.
The implication is she stole an authorization card from someone in a bar,
right?
And he only has the capacity to authorize one card.
Right, exactly.
Not two.
So you have to choose, and it's a choice between a young woman and an old man.
Yeah.
And you can explore their backstories by talking to them. You find out the old man was somebody, he's augmented, and he had freaked out, and because of the incident at the end of Human Revolution, he became estranged from his family because he sort of flipped out during that and attacked people, so they were afraid of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember exactly the woman's storyline. It was
the woman has some sort of fairly severe disorder,
right?
Which prevents, like, she can't interact with other people normally socially.
Right, okay. So those are the two people you have to save, and you can choose one or the other. So you choose one, and that one person gets, you know, taken, or gets their passes to get out of Prague, and the other person doesn't.
Mm-hmm. It's technically a pass to keep them out of Gollum City.
Right, sorry, yeah. And so the person you choose matters, because that the other... Well, it matters in the sense that it can change what happens later in the game in another separate side mission.
Yes. So again, this is another example of where there is a correct choice.
Well, it
I promise you, it is.
Because
the correct choice is the woman. Because when you pick the woman, she is then saved. She turns up at Samizdat later on, and then you can go and extract the leader of Samizdat K, and in the cell with him is the man.
Ah, okay.
So you save both of them.
The old man isn't there because there's somebody else in there.
He's another Samizdat guy.
Oh,
he's still
That's
there.
That's the guy I saved.
Yeah, there's three people there if you save the woman.
Ah.
And so then you basically get them to put on police uniforms. They come back through Prague with you, and you meet back up. And then everyone is there together, and that is the best possible outcome. If you don't do it that way, the woman gets sent to Gollum City, and that's the end of it. You never see her again.
Yeah. So, but there is a correct way, but you do have a choice that actually does mean something.
Yes.
Because it means what it actually means is whether or not the woman gets saved. It's not clear when you're doing that.
In that way, it's the same as do you save Miller at the end or not?
It's a roundabout stupid way of giving you that decision. It would be much better to actually make it a meaningful decision rather than one with a correct.
That's true. If you do that, the old man never shows up again.
But I tell you what saving the old man does, at least what it did for me, because I saved the old man. It introduces, when you meet up with him and Samizdat, who are the underground news ring to, you know, expose everything.
I like those people, by the way.
When everything's under lockdown, you go and meet him underground in Prague, and he does the only time that I could find in the game where they reference real-world events in relation to what's happening during Mankind Divided. And he talks about Warsaw in 1982. He says, this is just like Warsaw 1982. It was the same back then. Nothing much has changed and so on. We lived through that and we'll get through this. It's the only time that they ever do anything like that I could find in Mankind Divided.
Yeah. I was kind of mad when... I think it happened with me that I was like, game, seriously, start talking about it. Talos Rucker... You're talking with Talos Rucker and it's like he's talking about, I didn't expect to be head of an organization like this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like... And you're not going to mention Nelson Mandela at all because...
Yeah, or anybody else, anything like that.
Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
Not even in dialogue after that mission or something. Like Jensen talking to someone else.
Yeah, I tell you what that is. That's the game avoiding being political.
Yes.
Because
avoiding in heavy air quotes.
I had this earlier, and I have to bring this up because one of the things they said, due to the criticisms that they got for the marketing, Mari DeMar, I'm sorry if I butchered that name, by the way, the executive narrative director of the game, responded to the controversy by saying that they are trying to present the issues of the world without judging anyone for their actions.
Apart from these people who are being horrifically racist, you know, like, racism is bad, everyone can get behind that. Anything else, that's up to you, player. That's up to you.
Yeah.
What I think is dangerous, and it's also happened with The Division, where they said, we have no political message whatsoever. There's two things that might be happening. Well, maybe three. One is, there is a political message behind it, but they don't want to mention that. Two, they really don't think there's a political message behind it, and they have not been paying attention, and oh god, what have they put in there? Or three, there is very clearly a political message in there. They would like to talk about it, but the publisher really wouldn't like it.
Can I just ask a question? The Division.
Yeah.
Is it still correctly titled Tom Clancy's The Division?
Yes.
Okay.
Is this the same Tom Clancy that, like, wrote all those political thrillers?
Yes.
Yeah, but his name being on a game is just like, he didn't write it.
I know, that's besides the point. It kind of tells you there's going to be a certain mentality of, we love the military, and... go nationalism.
Yeah, but that's not political.
No, of course not.
According to...
How could that be political?
How could that stop political at all? It's ridiculous.
No. Anyway, how is that even political?
Anyone whose politics differ slightly from mine, that's politics.
Everything else is normal in the way the world works and is not...
Keep politics out of my games, saying... keep all the politics in those games that I agree to throw out everything else.
That's basically what this game is saying. It's saying, if you agree with us, then there's nothing political in this game whatsoever. And what we're saying is basically not contentious at all, so there's no way you can disagree with us, so there's no politics in our game.
Also, I'm thinking, like, what is the game trying to say, aside from, racism is bad?
Nothing. That's exactly it.
I don't even think, like...
I don't think it's saying that either. No, that's my point.
This is something I wanted to get to, that we talked about this earlier, that it doesn't feel like it has a point. I think because, like we said, the plot of original Deus Ex was a government conspiracy. You're fighting the conspiracy. And it's similar in Human Revolution. Basically, the plot of Deus Ex games are you fight a conspiracy and uncover it, and it's a mystery, and you find out what's really going on. And actually, it's the same in Mankind Divided. It just is dressed up in the language of a racism allegory.
And the thing is, I liked the dressing up they did in Human Revolution, because in that case, they said, look, we have these augmentations. People can be enhanced.
Mm.
Is that a good idea? Because it's not something that we're experiencing right now, but something that might happen in the future. It's actually a good question to ask.
It's speculative.
Because I was like, I don't think it's a good idea, but I know that other people disagree.
Well, because it's a very common sci-fi trope of, you know, what does being human really mean, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, how far does that go with people being mechanically augmented and so on? Those are the little bits of flavor and so on in Human Revolution. In Mankind Divided, it's more like, well,
I mean, it's a continuation of it, because it's still asking, like, look, these people who have mechanical arms, legs, partially mechanical brains, are they still human? Because thinks they are not.
It's not asking that question, because the story it's presenting is like, yes, they are clearly human, because and they're being oppressed, and that's bad. So it's not asking the question, it's telling you.
So, actually, weirdly and confusingly, and I don't really like this, but the closest analogy I can find, I may have made mention of it earlier, is an intensely political thing. It's people's right to go equipped with a weapon. Like, because all these augmented people are constantly equipped. Like, it doesn't... The game's central premise is that it equates racism and anti-orgism as the same thing, whereas it's actually not, because a person who is a different color than you or I isn't able to beat you to death with their amazing, like, metallic limb that is, you know, feels no pain and is super strong.
Even though some people think they can.
That's the thing, is that, yeah, like, you know, the truth of the world is that everyone is basically the same.
Yeah.
Yes, you know? And despite the fact that some people think that there's...
Yeah.
And the ridiculous thing happened after one of the police shootings that they said, like, there's this word they used. Black rage?
Oh, God. Yeah, the thing with race is, you know, it's very... I mean, it's simple enough, but it's like, you know, ascribing qualities, negative qualities to people based on
race.
prejudices and, you know, race. And, yeah, nothing, you know, no actual basis in reality.
But that language doesn't actually fit in Mankind Divided because these people literally are walking weapons.
Yeah, I mean...
And they have the capacity to, you know, be overridden by an outside force, be driven to commit violent acts beyond their control. They are genuine threats that exist to other people in the world.
And it's not just a hypothetical thing, because that's what happened at the end of Human Revolution. Yeah.
But it never actually... they make that racism analogy, and they stick with it the whole time. They never actually explore it any deeper. Like, they equate... minority races or people of color in that world with augmented people, and there's not really a comparison to be made there.
Is this a good moment to mention that we're all white?
I was gonna bring that up because
might be a good moment to mention this. By the way,
this is the perspective that we are coming at it from. So obviously, we do not have. You know, first-hand experience of this, we can only go off what we've read and what other people have said. So apologies if we are, you know, getting things wrong or mixing things up.
Please do comment.
Yeah, you know.
Place comments underneath this. I want to hear that. If I make mistakes, please correct me on them.
Yeah.
It's always good to hear that.
Yeah, it is. And the reason that it's the three of us doing it is because, you know, we're just three friends who thought, why we have a lot of ideas and opinions about this game.
Yeah,
so
and it happens to have these themes in it.
Yeah, it's impossible to talk about the, you know, the story and narrative and themes of Deus Ex Mankind Divided without talking about this stuff.
Yeah,
and you know,
even though it tries to do that itself.
to finish off my thought originally, just quickly, it would have been more interesting if the developers had had the guts to actually address those issues and try and put in some more modern stuff about, you know, real life racism that actually happens, rather than going, it's mechanical apartheid. And that's different. Like, what we have nowadays is not, you know, racism very clearly still exists.
Yeah.
But the way it's exposed and brought out is very different to back, you know, what they were talking about with mechanical apartheid or real apartheid, where it's, you know, very legally based things saying this race is superior to another one. Nowadays, it's more in the dark. Like people, like we were talking about, people have these opinions about other people that are based in lies. And that's all it is. Like, they could have actually addressed that, but they veered away from it.
Mm. And the thing is, I don't... This is going to be something that I think is going to come up a lot in this podcast. Basically, based on the nature of how especially AAA games are made, it's hard to ascribe something to the developers being like, "What? Why didn't they mention this?" I wouldn't be surprised if Square Enix said, "No, we don't want you to talk about that because we want to sell more games."
Agreed.
Yeah, it's hard to pin down who is responsible for this.
I want you in my office. That's who I'm talking to.
I always get the impression by the analogies that are made in the game and the way the world is designed that the people making it are a lot more clever than the people marketing it.
I would definitely say that. Like, all the little stories like we talked about with environmental design and even the side quests and the writing in that is much better.
Okay, to go on a slightly more positive note, can we please get into the environmental design? Because it's incredible.
We mentioned it a bit earlier, but yeah, it's...
What I decide is like, okay, I want to look at this environmental design. So I found the split between the two cities. But if you go into apartments, when you walk into someone's apartment, you look around, you can... Usually, if you pay a bit of close attention, you can tell who this is. Because if you go, I think, one floor down from your own apartment, there's an eviction notice on the board. If you open that, it's a painter's house, because there's a board, there's several cases of paint, there's pictures of family near the near the bed. And I think the man is there at the beginning of the game. He isn't there later in the game. Another apartment in your place, if you go downstairs to the board where all the addresses and names are, your own is there. There's one that's marked out and has a rainbow on it. If you go to that apartment, drug dealer.
Yes.
There's like these breathers called neon that you can find people using throughout the city.
Yeah, that's a whole side quest. It's got a very involved...
Yeah, and there's just stacks of these things in there. Mm. It's just, you walk in, the first thing is like somebody tells you to leave. I'm like, wait, what? You find out that this is the drug ring that is giving the neon to all those people out there.
Wow.
There is a person across from you, two floors down, that has an apartment that is clearly a cat person. Holy shit.
There's pictures of cats everywhere. The other thing is, he also has a telescope trained on Jensen's apartment.
Yes. And you find out in a later side quest why. Because that apartment gets wrecked during that side quest.
Mm. Oh, why is that? I don't remember it.
Oh, it's a great side quest. I really like that one, actually.
That's the one with the person who seems to be killing augmented people by ripping their augments out.
Because it turns out that Taiyang Medicals decided that they could use other people's
that
brain information
me.
In there.
I was like, why would you want convicted
I know. Oh, that was... Okay, because that was a really dumb piece of
writing. I don't understand what their reason was.
The idea was that they wanted people who have...
Should we explain what it is first?
Yeah, let's break this down. So it's basically there's a murder
great
that happens.
By the way,
there's a murder that happens in an alleyway right next to your apartment, and you go there, and you basically Jensen can start investigating this thing, and there's an eyewitness who asks you to and says, "I don't want to talk to the police because I don't trust them, because she's augmented," and so Jensen can get involved, and you go through this quest and up. You find out, obviously, we mentioned we would be spoiling a lot of things for this, but you find out that there's a lot of... It's a similar pattern to murders that happened years ago. Mm-hmm. And you find out that actually the murderer is the eyewitness you talked to earlier, the woman who had undergone experiments by Taiyang Medical to... They were trying to cure behavioral disorders, basically.
Yeah, for example, autism.
Yeah, and...
Yeah. Think in that direction.
I think they also mentioned...
Just a whole can of worms, by the way.
Yeah, like just social disorders or behavioral disorders and apathy even they bring up.
That was like, oh, so you can cause people to be apathetical to change. Oh, great.
No, they were trying to stop people being apathetic. Yeah,
if you can stop it, you can also cause it.
True. But so the idea was that they would take healthy, I'm putting this in air quotes, you understand, people's brain patterns and upload them to the other person's augments to try and basically graph them together.
Yeah, basically just giving them the pieces that they were missing.
Yeah, which is a ethical goddamn minefield.
Just like... like...
So you can talk to the doctor who did the experiments on the eyewitness, and you find out that basically people weren't willing to donate their brains, weren't willing to go through with it. Funnily enough,
it's not even actually donating their brains; it's copies of their brain.
Right. So people weren't signing up for this.
And again, you find this out through a social org boss fight conversation.
Well, yeah, you talk.
You can actually you can get it wrong, and he won't tell you.
Mm. Yeah. So you find that out, and then they say, "Well, so nobody was signing up for it, so we used people from prisons."
Yeah, they got better accommodations if they helped. Like,
I'm like,
second ethical area, but okay.
And the person who committed the original murders had their brain patterns copied onto this woman that you met earlier, and she's actually been committing the murders because she's been kind of possessed by the mental copy of the actual murderer. Like... The bit where he says, like, we couldn't get average people to do this, so we got prisoners, is like, how stupid are you that you thought, we want relatively normal brain patterns to get prisoners, murderers. That's a great...
Like, don't use death, bro, you fucking idiots. You use the petty crimes down the line. Like, they might turn into shoplifters. That's probably not that bad.
So it's like that piece of story, that piece of narrative, that was dumb.
I do like
it, no, it's exactly what Tae Young Medical would do.
I do like the guy you talk to's sort of, you can see he's trying to justify his actions to himself while he's talking to you.
Yes.
That was pretty clever. I liked that.
You can clearly see, like, no, because when you start talking about, especially when you bring up ethics, like, that's an ethical minefield. It's like, no, ethics are things for other people to bother with. Like, well,
I think his actual line is something like, right and wrong are outdated concepts.
Oh, God, yes.
And then at that point, you're like,
warning,
all right.
Warning, libertarian.
I think I knocked him out afterwards. Like,
oh, yeah, I did the same thing. I was like, right, I'm going to finish this dialogue tree. Okay. All right, well, I've got all the information I need, and like just stood behind him, and it's like tap tap punch.
Like, I don't, I'm not going to kill, but I can knock you out.
I do enjoy actually that the game. Just as an aside, the game hasn't removed what in the previous game was referred to as the Kung Fu hookers.
What?
So what that means in real terms is the animations that you play, or takedowns when you press a button, are preset animations that the characters that are nearby you just enter into. Mm-hmm. So if you walk up to a group of, say, two people, whoever they are, if they're random civilians or not, and you press Q, it will trigger an animation where one of them attacks you with a flying high kick. Like, I'm not joking. Like, they will do a spinning roundhouse to your head, which you then block and then elbow their friend in the face as you're spinning away from them, and then your friend to like headbutt them. And it works on anyone. It works on people who are actively trying to fight you, and that makes sense. But according to like the world, the rest of what the street will have seen, Jensen was just walking down the road, and then out of nowhere, this crazed civilian attacked him. And then he defended himself against the civilian and also his friend.
Wow.
You know, and what does that tell us about the world? That martial arts school are making a killing in the future.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. All right.
So that was that quest.
Yeah, no, but...
But to finish off, yeah, you end up finding out that the woman who lives across from you is, you know, has been experimented on in that fashion, mm-hmm. and that she is actually... going using the memories of this person that have been implanted, and they've convinced her that she needs to save augmented people by ripping out their augments and killing them.
And that's why she has the telescope trained on Jensen's apartment.
Yeah.
Because he needs a lot of saving in that department.
Yeah.
No, but it's,
you can confront her, and you know, you have a choice as to how you you can again boss fight.
That.
You can actually do either boss fight with her. You can talk her down, or you can just knock, you know, fight her or kill her and knock her out, or whatever you want to do.
You can use the keyword, I think.
That allows you to talk her down.
Yeah, exactly.
And that actually calls forward but back to the original game, where two of the agents that you come across that are mechanically augmented like Jensen, JC is a different kettle of fish. He is nano-augmented, which means he's far superior to them. They are clunky and old and outdated. Nanomachine son. Mm-hmm. They both have implanted kill phrases, where if you say the words to them, they explode.
Right, I remember that.
And I hope that's not something you say in random conversation.
No.
The one was Lamputin Machine and the other one was Flatlander Woman, so it's not going to come up very often.
No.
There's a possibility, but it's unlikely.
That's the problem.
Well, they don't know they exist.
No, but
like, it's... You're browsing the internet, like, Flatlander Woman, you just explode.
Whoops.
But yeah, so that's actually a clever... in-world call ahead to an event that's going to take place with implanted kill phrases in the future. And it's...
So for a lot of the environmental design, particularly in Prague, a lot of it, a lot of the more detailed bits, are either part of or lead to side missions.
Mm. Yeah, but what I like is that when you walk into somebody's apartment, I think there's one that you walk in, you see a bunch of crystal on the table, and there's a whole bunch of spray cans, and there's a mural on the wall. And you're like, this man is a street artist, and you hack us a computer, and indeed he is. They even tied those two together. And if you go out and you walk down the street, you actually see that mural again. So he practiced in his own room to paint it down the street as a form of protest.
Yeah. If you want like a more in-depth discussion about this, there's a good video by Game Maker's Toolkit on small levels or small worlds in video games and using Prague as a particular example.
It's really good.
And a lot of it is, it improved, it did improve a lot from Human Revolution. Just, it actually feels like a real place, which helps. It helps you get involved in the story, but it's still, you still feel outside to it as Jensen.
Mm-hmm. Looking at the apartment that Jensen has in the building, I think that's by design.
Yeah, I mean,
like that's too obvious to have missed.
Well, like, it's a very nice apartment, and all the other ones are kind of crap.
All of them are. Like, there's moisture in the walls, there's cracks around doors, and the other apartments I checked, those are way nicer.
So yeah, like, I think what we've been able to sum up is that the main problems that this game has are that, for me, it's that the augmented oppression is all experienced secondhand, and so they have to really lean heavily on stuff like, you know, emails or environmental design, which is good when you pay attention to it. But if you're the sort of player who just breezes through the game, then you may not pick up on that.
A lot of it's via association as well.
Yeah, if I think if there's something you're trying to say, if there's a theme to your game, which I think every game should have, and I doubt that this game defined it very clearly, then put it in your main plot. Don't put it in your side plots. Put it in your main plot. What is this about? What are the other things informing? Because in Human Revolution, the main plot revolved around augmented people. Do we need to, is this a time bomb waiting to happen? Is this a good idea or not? Which was also defined in the side quests. Like, there was a clear theme to this. And in this case, I think the main quest is like, it's related to it, but it doesn't feel tied to it.
I think, and like, if I had to dig for a theme in this game, I think it would be, survival.
How so?
Because that's really all the people who are that's all the augmented people are trying to do, is survive and exist and go about their daily lives. That's all they're trying to do, because they're being oppressed the whole time. And the extremists see the continued survival of augmented people. They need to take extreme action to ensure that.
And where does this place... it does place Marchenko in that. The Illuminati are...
Marchenko is very clearly delineated as a separate faction. Like, he is in charge of... I wanted to talk about this at the start. The guys in the gold masks, right? It's important that they're wearing gold masks because gold was the theme of the augmented people being on top in the last game.
Right.
Like, that was the color that denoted that. So they basically... That faction wants a return to that state. They have inserted themselves into the ARC because they want to co-opt it from the inside and use it as cover for their illicit activities.
Right.
So the ARC and that faction are very separate, but Marchenko links them by being important members of both and being secretive. So what's actually going on there is that the ARC is being used to hide the actions of that other group.
As a front, basically.
So in fact, the actual theme I would lock this down, game as being, would be like a proxy Cold War.
Yeah, I could also see that.
So, but that's the thing. It's like the fact that we have vague ideas and nothing. There isn't a clear theme.
It's not something that's very clear. It's like you can have more themes in there.
Yeah,
like,
you can have more than one, but it doesn't.
It's also always up to interpretation of the viewer, player in this case.
Always the case. And, you know, with video games, you can influence it yourself by how you approach things. Not so much in this game, because, as we talked about, it forces you down a certain path.
It doesn't force you down the path, it just allows you to make decisions that it knows are incorrect.
Yeah. It doesn't force you, but it just says, this way, don't do that one.
It's
but
more
freedom
than some other games give you.
True. No, all right, I'm going to take a quick aside here to talk about the problem with the illusion of choice, right? Okay. So, yeah, some games are very linear and you don't get to choose what happens at all. You just play through it. I don't know, something like Half-Life 2, Halo, anything like that. You play through the story, certain things happen at certain points, but there is an element of interactivity where, you know, how you go through a level, but the overall story doesn't change. That's fine. We're used to that. We know what that's like.
It's a good way of telling a story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what you're getting into, at least. And you have certain other games that do have a very open-ended story or have a certain number of endings that you can work towards. The problem with this game is that it gives you the illusion of the second example, the idea that your choices do actually mean something for the overall story of the game, then they actually don't. It's the illusion of choice, and that's worse than not being given one in the first place, because then you're under no illusions about what the game is going to it expects from you.
It actually breaks immersion.
Yeah. I disagree on that, because what I find interesting, and it's only a little bit in this. I think games like the Dragon Age series do it better. Where I don't see these. Mass Effect 2 actually does as well. I know you don't like talking about those, but
go
tough
on,
luck, buddy.
Go on.
Because it's not so much to me about what the choice sometimes does to the narrative. Like, if the grander narrative stays the same, and even if it's just a side character, even if it's nothing important, if the game asks me a question that makes me think, what do I find as a person important? Because both in Mass Effect 2 and Dragon Age Inquisition, there are two quests that ask both... In both games, there's a quest that asks me a question. I was like, what does this choice say about me? Like, if I were to post this choice in real life, what would I choose and why do I make that decision?
Can I ask what choice you're referring to in Mass Effect 2?
The Geth, Legion side mission. You get to choose between either destroying all the Separatists or basically brainwashing them without them ever knowing.
Right.
And I was like, I considered the freedom of thought so important that I blew them up. And Dragon Age Inquisition, there's a point where one of your characters, one of your party members, Cole, who is basically half spirit, half human, it's a whole thing. You basically have to choose either by dragging him fully into being a person, a human, or pushing him back to his original form, where he's more distant, but also what he used to be. And that took me 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I was staring at that choice for 10 minutes to be like but I know it's cool being a person, but that's technically not what he is, and should I force that on him?
That's not what we're saying, though.
Yeah, because those choices
that matters.
They do actually have.
Like you just said, that has instant ramifications in story terms because the character that you're making the choice about changes.
When you go back into the DLC later, Cole is the same person. No matter what.
Yeah, but like he's had a different thing take place in his character, and it affected you. That choice that you made affected your interaction with the game on a level that is beyond what Mankind Divided offers you.
Because I had a similar conundrum when you get the choice between going after the bomb maker or going for the bank, which is actually funny because Marchenko mentioned the thought process had, because I was like, do I save this person now, or do I go after the potential to save people later? And Marchenko asks you the same question at the end of the game. Like, do you really believe so much in hypotheticals, saving Nathaniel Brown, stopping the Human Restoration Act? Do you believe enough in the hypotheticals to sacrifice the people you know are going to die if you don't stop me across the road?
Yep, and that's that's relevant. But as we've pointed out earlier, it doesn't matter because you can bypass it.
Yes, and that's something I disagree with.
Yeah,
I'm sad about that. That's an option.
That is an illusion of choice because it's telling you this choice matters when it doesn't.
So with those, like for example, those other choices you mentioned, there is a point of no return, right? That choice is a point of no return. You make that choice, the choice sticks. With the things in Human Revolution, depending on which ones they are, but certain that example, like you make the choice, and you can circumvent that choice afterwards.
Yeah, I think that's probably a failing where it's like, you can have your cake and eat it. No,
yeah.
Choose.
So using Dragon Age, actually Dragon Age 2, as the example of a choice where what you do doesn't matter, Anders at the end of Dragon Age 2, spoiler alert for Dragon Age 2, he asks you, I need your help. Like, he spent the whole game with you being this, again, dual personality split between a spirit and him. And the spirit is the spirit of justice.
Turned into vengeance by his interaction with him.
Yep. And at the end of the game, he says to you, I need your help with this. Do you trust me enough to help me with this thing? And if you say yes, you help him, and he blows up the Chantry.
And if you say no...
He blows up the Chantry.
Exactly.
It's completely pointless, and
Also, I didn't kill him there at the end at the start because I thought it's like he's my only healer. Turns out my sister comes back after that. I was like, one sec, reload. Hi, Anders.
So it's one of those things where the choice that you don't exactly, this is exactly my point. The choice you don't understand at the beginning to kill or not kill him impacts later in the game, but the choice after meeting the character and interacting with them, it offers you a fake choice, and that breaks immersion harder than anything that I've ever seen in a video game.
Yeah.
Like, because you can spend all that great time in Dragon Age Inquisition wondering and moralizing, oh, should I do this or should I do that? Mankind Divided. Is it right to save the bomb maker? Is it right to save the other person? And it's taken away. It genuinely takes away from the experience when you find out, oh, it didn't matter because I could have just done this.
It sets your choices up as meaningful.
To me, it still asks the question, though.
Yeah, it asks the question, but it does...
Personally, that's for me, the journey in that is more important than the destination at the end.
Like, it asks you the question, but it's a question that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It doesn't. In the end, it's ones and zeros displaying an image on my screen. So.
Yeah, but it can.
It influences me.
It would unquestionably be better if that decision that you made had a consequence.
Yes, so I'll agree on that.
Let's take another example of when you get to the end, the final boss fight, in fact, the only actual boss fight in the game, against Marchenko, he basically tells you that you should come and fight me or I will... What was it?
He's going to blow up the building across the way, and all these innocent people are going to die.
So you must come fight me now. But there are a group of whatever dignitaries,
like they're UN and other officials.
Right. They're off in another part of the building. Basically, they're drinking champagne, but the champagne has been poisoned. So your choice is, and it throws up on the screen a decision that pauses the game until you choose one of go to Marchenko or save the delegates.
Could I back up for a second?
Yeah.
Sorry. It actually sets this entire encounter up when you meet the guy at the start, and you say you have the option of saying to him, "This is ridiculous. Your security is inadequate. These people are going to attack you. Why are you still going ahead with this? You know, let us fix this problem for you."
Yeah.
There is going to be a terrorist attack on this event. And he ignores you. He's like, no, it's fine. We've done all the security things. There'll be no problems whatsoever.
And he also makes the argument like, this is one of the last chances I'm going to get of stopping the human restoration.
And yet, what Red said earlier about giving the option to reference an important, you know, figures who fought for equality, that would have been like the moment to do it because, you know, he's taking a stand effectively. Like, the game presents it as him being a bit. He doesn't want to believe what you're saying, but what he's actually doing is saying that his personal safety is less important than the opportunity to give equal rights for orgs across the globe.
Also, it's about his money, as you find out. There's a lot of money involved for Nintendo.
Yeah. Also, that
I'm kind of sad about that because it's like that kind of defeats the whole purpose of it.
Yeah, does undercut that a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I liked it better without knowing that.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying at the start. You think it's about that stuff, so that's how it's set up, and you're like, right, well, you know, they're here to fight for org rights, so I'm going to do what I can to protect that. And you do find evidence that they poisoned the champagne, but you can't do anything about it because the game restricts you. It's like, no,
they're jamming the comms, basically.
No, they're not.
The comm jamming only happens after what is it?
Once you get into the building, pretty much.
You find evidence on the Arctic base, which is a very short section of the game that got skipped over in our discussion because it's completely narratively irrelevant.
Well, the Swiss Alps.
It's a filler episode.
The Swiss Alps, yeah. Not the Arctic.
The Swiss Alps, yeah, you're right. But, like, there's a whole bit when you're there where Jensen gets poisoned by the orchid and then he gets over it because he doesn't have special blood. And you found evidence, or you could find evidence there, that they have champagne and they've poisoned it and that there is poisoned champagne travelling somewhere.
But the
whole time, you don't get to do anything with that info, because you can't, like, the character Jensen is incapable of making the link that you as the player can make and warn
people. It's like, don't drink any champagne tonight. Just don't drink any champagne.
Just throw all the champagne out.
Tap water.
We've talked about this, Red, actually, on the Farscape podcast, that the player is, like, the viewer, or in this case, the player, is ahead of the character.
Yeah.
Which is, in that particular instance, is a real problem, because you're like, don't drink the champagne! It's poisoned!
Like, I know exactly where it's going to strike! Just get
Jensen, you idiot!
Heineken bottles for beer!
And again, even in that section, like, you go up to the Tarvor security control point, and there is a gigantic red splodge of blood on the wall behind the man you're talking to, and, like... The camera zooms into his face when the conversation happens, and he's just like, oh, yeah, so how's it going, sir? Is this perfectly normal? And the camera is pointing directly at a huge blood splatter.
I may have missed that when I was
playing. Yeah, me too.
Like, so I streamed a lot of this game, and I was playing that. I was like,
well, you've got other things.
Well, yeah, but I was like, oh, this guy seems... I mean, something seems off about this guy. And chat was like, "There's, how are you looking at the blood on the wall?" Like, what? Huh? What? So anyway, to tie that back to what I started out with,
yeah,
like,
sorry.
The champagne is poisoned.
Yeah.
So you are given this choice, and again, this is a choice that fills up your screen. Well, the options come up, the game pauses until you pick one.
And it's left or right.
It's left or right. So it's A or B. It's go to Marchenko or save the people from the champagne. And Marchenko's like, you have to come here now or I'll blow up the building. So the idea being that, you know, if you go to save the people, you may not make it to Marchenko in time.
Yeah, that's not...
That stopped me for a period of 10 seconds. Where I moralized and I decided, right, I'm going to save the people who have the potential to save millions of others.
So yeah, that's what I did the first time. So here's what happens. So you go there, you run off to save them. You go the other way than the direction to Marchenko.
I stopped to save Miller first because I had the antidote.
Yeah, I didn't. But anyway, you run off and you go to save them, and then you're like, right, okay, I have to get back to Marchenko now. So you turn around. Where the game is pointing you, and you turn around and run back the other way, you can't make it. Well, you probably can make it in time, but it's very difficult.
I did it accidentally.
If you go that way, so it's hard to do, but it's possible. So why?
Hang on. It's hard to do because what I did actually, because you guys had told me.
Yeah.
Depending on what items you get, it's quite easy to. Get to the other end.
Because here's the other thing, right? So if you run back the whole length of the building, if you do it quick enough, if you're really good, you can just get there in time before Marchenko blows up the building. In the room where the people are drinking, there is a secret door that if you open takes you to an elevator that immediately takes you to Marchenko.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
What I actually did was okay, I was when you guys told me, because you talked a little bit about this beforehand, like, what you guys told me was that, depending on what choices you made, it was easy. So what I did was, I first ran to Marchenko, because I was like, look, saving the people I know I can save, don't deal in hypotheticals. Then I was like, wait, no, hang on a second, they said that, I have the jammer. So I ran to the party. I told them, don't drink it, it's poison. Ran back... Easily done. I didn't even know I was still on a time limit. Yeah. I just ran. I was like, in character, I should be running, so I'm running.
That's what happened to me.
Yeah.
And I just walked in there and was like, well, I have this jammer, so I know I could just quit this problem right away.
Yeah. So, again, it's like, because it brings up that choice of like, you must decide. You're on a timer. You must decide. And then
it doesn't even tell you you're on a timer. It just implies it.
Marchenko says to you, like, you have to get here quickly, otherwise I'm going to blow up this building. So,
and that's the thing. I thought when I got into the room, he was going to blow it up because I hadn't been quick enough. But it turns out just going there is fine. He's like, no, I'm not going to blow it up, even if you don't have the jammer.
I figured that if I'd done that in the other order, like if I'd gone...
You can't. The game ends when you take out Marchenko.
What I thought is that if you go to the party, take out the wine, and go back, you don't have the jammer, then he just blows it up at the start of the fight.
Yeah, that's what I assumed would happen, but he doesn't.
So,
if you're quick enough.
So first of all, there's, like, we break down the problems with that. First of all, this choice doesn't matter.
If you're quick enough, it doesn't matter.
Quick enough. If you do it, like, without the secret door, you can still do that. Mm-hmm. The fact that there is a secret door that takes you immediately to the end is completely undercuts that. So it's like...
So the correct way here is to go to the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, no, that does kill all the people in there.
So it's like 12 people.
So, like, so
fine.
Well,
I mean, 12 against Miller, I'm sorry.
Yeah, actually, I don't feel too bad. I mean, Miller was...
Well, Actually, I kind of look on it as it's, you know, they're making that choice themselves, and it's not really, like, they've all made that decision. It's not really on me to tell them they can't kill themselves like that.
I get, well,
whereas Miller's getting killed.
I see that point,
it's a tricky point
that they don't, that I don't, but think I, they ever really bring up that,
what
that
I
they
hope
make
is
that
they
choice.
Bring the ball maker back in the next game and bring Miller back and have them mean this choice any meaning.
If we just talk about the bit with Marchenko at the end, the correct way to do it is to go to the party and then go through the secret door.
Yep. Yeah. Definitely.
And also cure Miller.
Oh yeah, okay. Like, that's why I said, like, ignoring that's why I literally just said ignoring that part.
But it's like, in a different part. This is confusing, okay?
I understood that for once.
Hooray. We didn't.
I got subtext.
I forgot. I'm talking to Red. I shouldn't use subtext.
He's used to this. He knows me.
But it's like, you go there and you can just do both at the same time. So the way which it presents that decision to you in the first place is, this is important. Because, like, you can't progress until you choose. So, like, this is a big deal.
It freezes time while you choose.
On the other hand, it does say, like, you can be the person that says, like, either they die or they die. And be like, fuck you, I said both.
So actually, that came up.
It does mirror the Paul incident. It's like, no, you have to run. It's like, no, fuck you, no.
Well, that's a binary choice. But what you're correct, because in the DLC, the missing link for Human Revolution, there is a bit, you're on a ship. I don't remember if it's on a ship. You're in a place.
No, you're on a boat.
You're on a boat.
Sure.
There's some cells. They're filling up with gas. There's another woman's cell. It's filling up with gas. She's got the potential to save all of these people out in the rest of the world, but you're sacrificing the test subjects. So you have to choose where you send the gas. Kill one person who has the potential to cure millions, or save lots of people who don't, and thousands more will die. And if you actually just drop down to the bottom of the place and shoot the gas pipe, then it saves both of them. So you have that Batman option. You have that, that third option of, you know, I'm going to do my own thing. It's set up in Deus Ex previously.
Yeah. So that, and again, I guess this is the Batman option, where it's like
that feels good for a player. Like, that's a satisfying thing to be like, I beat your system.
See, the problem I have with that, I don't remember what it was like in the Human Rev, but here it's basically you're presented with click A or B.
Yeah. The reason they do
the reason they do that,
I was thinking about that's actually mechanical. Because it gives you two markers. Even no matter what you choose, it gives you one marker, and that highlights, and the other one is still an option. If you go back into your objectives, you can just swap them. You can still make it, even after you've clicked those two buttons, you can still choose depending on which way you actually go.
Which, again, is really stupid.
I think they did that because a lot of people didn't realize that there were two objectives in the menu that they had to open by going into the objective screen and clicking the right one.
That's a function of them only letting you have one objective at a time,
yes.
Which is ridiculous.
If I can bring up gameplay for a second, becomes a real problem in the last mission.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
like, nothing takes you out of a game more, and, like, you're in your own little spy world, doing your spy thing, being like, oh, I'm hiding behind this sofa, and I'm going to reach over, pull a guy in, and punch him out, and then I hold E to drag his body away and hide it in a toilet, and, oh, why has my objective screen come up? Oh, right, I'm holding E.
Oh, that was really
dumb.
Because
it also opens the objective marker.
Yes.
God,
because you ticked an objective marker, one of 11 people have been knocked out, so now if you hold E, the game assumes you want to look at your objectives. And
no.
I know we weren't going to talk about that, but it really pulls you out of it.
Yeah.
Like, your own little story is going on in your head where you are Cyber James Bond, and you're doing all this cool stuff at a party, and then the game's like, objectives!
I think it is actually worth talking, it's definitely worth talking about in regards to narrative and story, because it breaks your immersion, and it stops that from...
That's 90% of my problems with this game, is when it broke immersion by doing something, you know, that only a video game would do, specifically if it didn't have... While having other options, it chose it to do it that way, that breaks the immersion.
Yeah.
So my problem with the binary choice mechanic, the way that it actually presents the choice, is that the fact that you can then break that choice is in itself somewhat immersion breaking. Let me try and explain what I mean by that.
Because it breaks your immersion in the first place by showing a giant menu with option A or option B on.
But so that's presented to you, and that's then presented as you're getting on, you know, this track or this track. So you think, okay, right. And then afterwards, basically, you compare it to the previous Deus Ex games where you could approach problems in any way, and that was, it was up to you, and you felt like you had that ability to approach things how you wanted to, and wait, if I go around there and save that and do this, then I can save them as well. It basically puts all that thought into the player's head. This one is like, you can only do one of these things.
Yeah.
You can only do one of these things. So you think, okay, I'll do this one. And then it turns out, no, you could do either of them either way. So it's like, well then why present the idea that I can only do one of them? Basically, it's hamstringing the player's ability to, or that thought of approaching things however you want.
And I think by what Nav says about by giving you the menu option, which in any other case is exclusive, which you have associated with once you choose one dialogue option, you can't choose the other anymore. Aside from the moment where you're trying to get some specific information. But you've been associated that it's pretty much one or the other. It conditions you again to say one or the other. I think the mechanics and the narrative are now intersecting here, where the mechanics tell you something that they've told you the whole time. And
so the difference actually with Human Revolution's DLC was that it never popped up that menu on screen.
Yeah, exactly.
And never said, do this or don't do this. You know, it's like, it told you, like, it's my favorite thing. My one of my pet peeves is when a game tells you, like The Witcher 3, go do this quest, it is here. It could actually just use in-game mechanics to show you where a quest is, but instead it plops a big blob on your map and says, go to this location.
Yeah.
Like, tell me how to do something, tell me it's a choice, then let me figure it out.
Deus Ex actually does that pretty well. The video was talking about, if you turn off the objective markers, people actually tell you addresses.
But when it comes to the choices like this, it's like it takes away the player's influence on the narrative, on the story, right? It takes that away in part while also giving you the illusion that you have a choice in the first place, because you're like, well, I'm going to pick this thing, and you think, okay, there you go. It's like a choose your own adventure book, right? Turn to page 95 if you want to see this. So you turn to page 95. But rather than that, you find out that actually you could read both page 95 and page 63 at the same time if you were doing it right. You know.
Then the question becomes, because the player might feel smart for doing that if they find that out, being like, well, oh, hey.
No, it was actually, that's kind of...
I think it's a tricky subject.
It is a tricky thing to do. I think by not offering you that binary choice and leaving it all open for you to interpret yourself, that makes the player feel smart.
I think that would have been better. I think the whole problem we get with this is the dialogue options that you get at the bottom that say one or the other.
Yeah, because
which it usually says, and suddenly it not saying that anymore.
Well, that's what I mean. Is like, if you have it, don't give them that A or B. You must choose. Leave it all open to interpretation. What that does is that lets the player figure out and tell their own story.
Yeah.
Through that.
I think an important facet of that actually is also you could potentially use a character in the game to tell the player that there is a choice going on, rather than having the omniscient voice of the game god this is an option, this is also an option, pick between them. If a person tells you you've got to do one or the other, then it's reasonable and relevant that they haven't got all the information and can be incorrect, and you have got a third option. But if the game tells you itself, breaking immersion says this or that, then that's, you assume that it's right.
So right, exactly, So you don't feel, when you break that, and then when you go manage to circumvent that, it didn't make me feel smart. It made me feel like the game was lying to me.
Yep, because it was.
So in this case, you'd argue that the best way to do this, actually, my hypothetical would be to remove the thing at the bottom that says one or the other.
Yeah.
And basically get two objective markers. This one goes to Natalia Brown, this one goes to Marchenko, and just have the dialogue Marchenko said about, you have to choose. Yeah. Just be the same.
Yeah, exactly. That's like,
I would actually have, I would go on further. What's the other guy's? The guy who you flick MacReady. A blade out at the start? MacReady, yeah. I would have MacReady contact you and say, Jensen, these bombs have gone live. Like, this, yeah. They're going to go soon. You know, you've only got time to either go and save the delegates or shut them off. You know, you've got to make that decision. And also, I'd have him throw in something about you having no heart or something because player, you know,
right,
like,
yeah.
mechanical stuff. Like, yeah. that's just
MacReady little dick.
Yeah, yeah, like that's exactly. his thing. But, you know, there's a grudging respect that builds up that could be built up between them over the course of a more interesting.
I was going to say to me, how do you see MacReady at the start and at the end? I don't see him in the middle.
Yeah, he's. I thought he was going to be a much bigger part of the game than he was.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is going to be fun.
And he was hardly in it. So, yeah, it's.
That's how I would fix that problem. I'd have a character who is fallible. Or potentially fallible, tell you that you've got no, you know, you've got to choose.
What it comes down to, there's a thing in when video game design that's whether something is diegetic or non-diegetic, and diegetic means that it happens within the game world. So something like if you have like say the a classic example is music, diegetic music is like you go there's a radio on the table playing some music. Non-diegetic is like the game soundtrack.
Right, I understand.
So you get the idea. The big buttons that come up and say pick one choice is a non-diegetic way of presenting that choice to you.
Yes.
The other things of like in-game characters talking about this and like you've only got time for one, you have to go save it, is a diegetic way of doing it, and that immerses the player in the world. And,
agreed.
And you feel smart when you figure out a third way to do it.
Especially if you prove MacReady wrong.
And this is a problem because the game already clearly knows that that is a possibility because it did it once already.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they've changed their method is a, like I know it might sound like we've been talking about this a lot, but it's actually really the same problem throughout the entire game.
Yeah.
In that the game is presenting you these choices, which are not choices, in a way that is not.
Non-diegetic.
Yeah, exactly.
And it is in the language that we are used to that implies that they are, what's the word, that they are
mutually exclusive.
Right. Yeah. That means that it's dishonest about how it tells its story. And that's a problem. And that's why I think I felt kind of dissatisfied. And so you take that and then you add to it the fact that there are all of, that it's not talking about real world allegories, real world racism, all this other stuff that is that it uses the language of and trappings of, and you just feel like the story that they delivered, they set up all these questions, didn't answer them, and were dishonest about how they presented your choices.
That's actually something about setting up questions, because I wanted to talk about that, because I mean we need to talk about this at some point. Let's talk about the ending.
I think I think we need to talk about that, and
okay,
because I know where you're going. People have mentioned that the game ends rather abruptly.
Hmm.
I think I disagree.
No, I 100% think that it's you can very clearly see where Square Enix were like, right, this is where this game ends.
We're now
going to have the sequel. Like they've been outside of this, we know they've been working on the sequel to Mankind Divided for at least like a year, maybe 2 years at this stage.
Yeah.
Like, because the project team, we talked to people who were on it, and they got moved off of the sequel onto this to get it finished in time.
So, like, the boss fight with Marchenko, I feel like, as an ending to a game, that makes sense. It's when you go back to your apartment, and Jensen and Alex talking to each other, that you realize that this is, like, the midway point of this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was mostly the problem, because who is Janus? And Janus could have been a mystery, if not for the fact that we know the next thing he wants to do is meet them.
Yeah, like, who's Janus? There's a side plot with Eliza Kassan from the
game. Great side mission. I'm surprised we actually skipped over talking about that, because she is one of my favorite things from Eliza Kassan.
I missed this side quest.
A notice board in Prague errors when you go near to it, and when you walk up to it, you get a message saying, come and find me.
So you basically find fragmented parts of Eliza Kassan.
Then you go and get a floppy disk, and you recreate her, and she's merged with the three people from the end of A Human Revolution, and they've created one, like, greater AI.
Yeah.
So the Eliza Kasan on the news is a fake copy of Eliza program.
I figured that because she.
And then they come after you, and like there's people, there's men in black that are coming to find Eliza Kasan's program and delete her. And then you teach her, like you have the option. It tells you it's a really good player choice because she asks you, please help define the parameters of my program, aka who am I and what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
And Jensen's like, well, if you are like, well, my Jensen made the decision to say, well, I think you are you, so you decide.
Yeah, I did the same thing.
I gave her that option because you can either tell her hide, help me, or you choose.
So that's a really good.
That's a fantastic choice.
A really good example.
I'm so sad I missed that quest because
it's a missable side quest.
What I was actually doing, because I found those glitching as well, it's like I grabbed a piece of paper and I started, because it's binary, I was like, what is this? It's X.
You fool!
It keeps repeating
interact
X.
With it in the game, you fool!
Press X to interact.
Yeah, it's telling you X, press X.
Holy shit, that's right. Because if you play the Xbox version, that's the interact button.
Right?
Meaning, oh god, it should have been E. It should have been binary.
Yeah, but they don't change a lot of things from going from console to PC, so why would they change that?
Why would they change that?
If it had done E, that would have worked slightly better.
So, but then what happens with Eliza Kasan after that doesn't get answered. You still don't know where she is or what she's up to. That's a thread that's left hanging.
Presumably she'll come back in the next game. Like, that was...
Well, not of mine.
No. Well, maybe she'll turn up in yours and you'll get to see her for the first time.
Yeah, but so...
No,
like,
she knows that won't happen.
So you don't know who Janus is.
Can I just acknowledge that we understand that it's supposed to be pronounced Janus,
yes.
But the game calls him Janus, so they we're calling him Janus.
Insist on pronouncing it Janus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah.
Yeah.
It was renamed to Jurectum.
Stop making all those jokes. Well,
No. So they leave a bunch of plot threads hanging of like what's really going on, or who's responsible.
One of those is wrapped up in the credits.
Yeah, where you find out that who the secret person working at TF-29 was
for
the Illuminati.
There's a slight conspiracy theory in there, actually, because I think I talked to you about this, Hats, about that I think is the Jensen we're playing in Mankind Divided the clone?
Is it the real Jensen? Because he has some amount of time that he can't.
That also gives him entirely too much credit.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
And also that his because if you follow the Seraph storyline and you go back to his apartment during the lockout, he basically alludes like, well, you have to draw your own conclusions, Jensen. I'm like, fuck you, Seraph. You know, apparently you have a theory.
Know.
Could you please share it with the?
I think that would be a thing that they would potentially do because if Seraph hadn't survived, obviously, then I would say there was some credence to that. But because your option four was blow up the place, and Jensen might have done that, and yes, indeed, be a clone. But because Seraph survives, I feel like that is far less likely.
Yeah, I mean that's a conjecture. That's
because the psychiatrist is talking about the subject and he's holding up remarkably well. And like,
maybe it could also be after having all those extra augmentations fitted.
Yes,
yeah. And also his old replaced with new ones because that's what Seraph alludes at.
Yeah,
like,
all his old
aren't there anymore.
Yeah, he had to be. They had to rebuild him. They had
which
the
actually
technology.
Begs the question: how much of Jensen is Jensen? Is it just like a brain on a stick?
Yeah. So to tie it back again, the ending before the credits is Jensen and Alex standing in Jensen's apartment talking about how many questions they still have.
Yeah,
yeah, that's not the best way to end.
And that's the end of the game. And you're like, well, so you've stopped your story halfway through, and ultimately it leaves you. Left me feeling unsatisfied because, like, well, wait, I have to wait for the next game or DLC
I think the problem was that they did that last scene.
It will also be next game, Hats. It won't be DLC because the DLC will all be, like, inserted into the story.
Right, okay.
So they're not that stupid. Okay. Well, on the other
hand, it's Square Enix. Yeah. I mean, because that final scene points out how many questions they still have.
Like, because otherwise it's like, okay, you stopped Marchenko. Good. Well, that he was kind of set up at the start. You don't figure out what the Illuminati were up to, but you don't in the first one either. So, it's fine. But and when they said, I have all these questions and I need to meet Janus, and
it's a very clear, like, I can basically see the point Square Enix were like, right, perfect, boss fight, end it there, stop the game.
Yep.
Then we can have you guys can all make the sequel, and we'll make even more money on the next game using the same engine and blah, 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 blah.
But sir, that leaves the game a bit short. I don't know. Put something in the Alps in there.
Yeah. So
insert a mission where you go to the Swiss Alps and can bypass half the mission by fucking about with a crane.
A drill.
Yeah, I did that.
Yeah.
So at the end of it, you're like, well, wait, where's the rest of it? And it's like, Jensen, it doesn't say, but I wish it did. It's like, Jensen will return in Deus Ex, whatever.
Just quickly, talking about that mission, it asks you, basically, do you want to call Miller or Alex?
Right, yeah.
And that, again, is a totally irrelevant decision. Yep. It changes nothing.
I do like, again, like, who do you trust at this point? I was like, oh, I'm not calling Miller.
I think Miller's a good guy, but then called him, and then and chat was like, well, because I was streaming that, like, but what about these things? Like, oh, all right, I'll call Alex. And I tried that and didn't really seem to do anything.
No, there was no difference. The point is, Miller's a good guy as far as we know, so is Alex as far as we know.
Yeah.
Like, it could turn out that Alex is evil or whatever, or Janus is evil.
The thing was, at that point, because I was ambushed at my own mission, because they knew I was going to be there, I was like, I don't think I told Alex, and I know I told Miller, so let's roll the dice on that.
That's what it's supposed to set you up doing. It's supposed to make you mistrust Miller. That's why, leading back into the ending here, that's why when you find the psychologist in Miller's office, you're like, oh, I guess he is suspicious. Or, like, I guess, you know, something is going on here. Because in the credits, in the post-credit scene, we find out that she is working for the Illuminati.
That's why she was in his office.
And I don't like that it tells you that. Like, it out and out just flat says it. It's like, so it's like playing Mass Effect 2 after you've seen any of the marketing for Mass Effect 3. Because if you've seen any of the marketing for Mass Effect 3, you know Cerberus is evil.
also, they're called Cerberus.
Like, the choice at the end of Mass Effect 2 is a very straightforward, do you give Cerberus this installation or not? And if you've seen the marketing for Mass Effect 3, well, that answers the question for you, doesn't it? Because you know that they're evil.
Mm-hmm.
Or that they're going to turn evil.
I mean,
and so it means that when I play the sequel now, I will be fully aware that that character is working for the Illuminati.
Yeah.
But Jensen isn't.
Jensen doesn't know. Right, the player is given information that Jensen isn't.
Yeah.
So you have to... that's another problem.
That's stopping me from killing her the next time I see her.
That's going to be a real difficulty.
It's like,
she has to reveal
I know that
herself.
She's evil.
She has to reveal herself as evil the moment you see her in the next game. Otherwise, you can't do that anymore.
It would have been fine, like, if they just said, just confirmed that there was someone in TF-29 without revealing who it was.
She starts out with a different skin in that cutscene, because it's the holographic meeting room.
Yeah.
And she starts out looking different, and then when it's just her and I think it's Mandalay.
No, that's not Mandalay.
Someone else.
Bob?
No, it's an old guy.
It's the Illuminati guy. It's Everett.
I think it is.
Morgan. I think it's Morgan Everett. He's in Deus Ex as well, as like the Illuminati. But they're on your side. There, it's confusing.
Mm.
Basically, she is outed as being a member of this conspiracy. That is a problem for narrative going forward. And I don't know how they're going to deal with it, but I feel like they shouldn't have had to have dealt with it, because it wasn't necessary to give away. It was just tying up another of the loose ends that the game left hanging because it didn't have enough time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when you go to the sequel, you will know that. Jensen won't know that. So you remove that connection between the player and the game.
Which, I mean, dramatic irony works
in television.
Does it work here?
Yeah, no. Dramatic irony in video games is a difficult thing to do because, again, like, if you are working ahead of what the character knows, like, if you're ahead of the characters in TV, you can be like, oh no, don't do that. Ah, don't go in there, you fool.
Because you empathize with the characters.
Right.
Like, you empathize with a character on TV, you are a character in a video game, so you don't need to make them empathize with it as much. You just make them it. And when, again, it's immersion breaking. It's when why can't I warn people about the poison champagne? Oh my God.
I disagree that you don't have to empathize with your main character, especially if you're not, if it's not self-made. However, I think you're right. The dramatic irony just doesn't work.
Jensen is the blankest of blank slates.
Oh, yeah.
Let's put it this way.
They could have written him way better. He's better written in one, actually, in the Revolution.
My point is that they're relying on the player to empathize with themselves as Jensen rather than with Jensen.
So, and it means, dramatic irony on TV. Let's say there's a room in which there is a horrible monster. That if you go in that room, it will eat you, right? Mm. On TV, you know the monster's in there, but the characters don't. And so they're going to open the door. You're watching it going, oh no, don't open the door. Oh, it's, you're empathizing with them. It's exciting. In a video game, if you know that the monster is behind the door, but your character doesn't, you don't fucking go in the door. Yeah. Unless you're very committed to role-playing.
Your character's read the script.
Yeah, exactly. So it takes you out of it. And so that's what this same thing will do, because you're like, well, I know that she's working with the Illuminati, but Jensen doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it feels like at the end, the ending really puts the cherry on the cake of well, what was the point of any of this other than to set up the next game and make me play that? It doesn't do a good enough job of telling its own story.
Yeah, because you can't set up something else. Like we've seen in the Farscape rewatch, the season finales are actually always slightly cliffhangers and yet still complete an arc.
Plant little seeds that you can grow in the next game.
Yeah, and even then, finish something narratively, because I don't think they...
Yeah, tie it up nicely. Don't have your two characters sit and tell you how little they haven't explained.
Yes.
While we're talking about the psychologist character, she implies that they did something to Jensen's memories in order to help them find Janus.
Mm. Yes.
So that's basically setting up that currently they are using Jensen to do this stuff.
Yep.
Again, if the player knows that, it creates a real problem.
So it makes it no, don't go to Janus, don't go to Janus. Yeah. Well, I have to because I want to keep playing, but I shouldn't.
It's forcing, because if it keeps the linearity, then it ends up forcing you down a path which you know Jensen shouldn't be going down.
Yes.
Also, rather hilariously, if you do engage in air quotes the cops in Prague when the lockdown and kill them, then as a punishment, you are sent to talk to the psychologist.
Oh no!
Like as a in quotes punishment because you might be having problems.
So yeah, I mean that's how ultimately it feel a little bit cheated out of a closing narrative. Like there's not really much closure to the game at the end. And like I've said earlier, you add on to that all the questions it raises but doesn't answer, you think, well,
I think it could have avoided that as well by giving you some form of pathos. Like if you'd actually had that building explode, or the alternative, like if it forced the choice at the end, that would have given some pathos and would have been like, well, okay, that's there is a low point, Empire Strikes Back, we'll end it here.
Hmm.
Maybe attend a memorial.
Yeah.
At the end. That's
where you meet Alex.
Alex, and you say, I'm going after the people who did this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Not just but stand in his apartment.
Yeah, and then meeting Janus can be the start of the next one, because I think that's one of the things, don't mention it now. Mention it at the start of the next one.
Yeah, right. It feels like they're waiting for part two rather than the end of part one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've taken what is effectively a mid-season break where they need to be a season ender.
Yeah.
All right, so there are some... I know, Red, you wanted to mention some of the allegories or some of the references they make to real-world events, because we know that they don't do it explicitly textually. They don't do it explicitly in dialogue.
No, because when I heard we were going to record this podcast, I was like, okay, they're talking about mechanical apartheid. You know what? I'm going to read up on South Africa and... Nav is currently sitting back and enjoying the show.
Just settle in for this.
I'm letting you talk.
Carry on.
No. So I started reading up on that, and humdinger they're using a lot that happened in South Africa. Because if you remember the Santau group, that is making those separate cities? In South Africa, at some point, the idea of segregation and having basically giving black people their own nation inside the country to rule was something that came from the group that is the Sanak group.
Ah, okay.
Add a T, twist a C.
Yeah, pretty much.
The main organization that fought against apartheid, and if I'm not mistaken, Nelson Mandela was also part of, was the Afrikaans Nationaal Congres, or the African National Congress.
So the ANC.
ARC, A-R-C, right. Which started mostly with protests and strikes, which proved mostly ineffectual at the start.
And then became
Talos isn't being very successful from what I can see.
Yeah.
We should have talked about this first.
Oh, yeah, no, there's a lot of interesting stuff in here. And eventually, the ANC would go into exile and be a banned organization, right? The terrorist organization.
Yeah.
And people would go into exile, part of the prison. Something that's a little bit more subtle, but what they were also doing was retribalization in, in South Africa. The idea of, like, you need to put these people back into the natural habitat. The people can't live together. Again, very clearly going about that Human Restoration Act. And I noticed, like, when they say your people to Jensen about augmented people, like, these are not the same people. These are just people that have mechanical parts. They're not a culture.
Yeah.
Sorry, we should point out the Human Restoration Act is the focus of the last part of the game. The person that you're trying to protect is against it, and it is basically an act which puts into global law. We won't get into that.
No.
The game doesn't.
All augmentations are to be basically removed wherever possible from people.
The thing is, and that's kind of frustrating, because there seems to be two narratives about that, because that's what I heard characters say at some point, but if you look at the actual text in it, that's not what it mentions.
Really? What does it say?
Let me see. Security Council, observing that segregation, discrimination, and conflicts related to the status of augmented people poses a clear and continuing threat to international peace and stability, affirming the importance it attaches to respect for human rights and fundamental freedom of all, regardless of augmentation, and 1. Authorizes the mandatory application of the dampening biochip developed by Taiyang Medical Corporation to all augmented persons.
Right.
Which is all states have provisions to ensure this augmentation. Their augmented population are treated within 24 months. I'm going to paraphrase a little bit.
So they're getting a chip forcibly inserted into all of them.
Yes, basically a mind control chip, which they already have in there.
Well,
we know.
No, that it wasn't a mind control chip. It was a chip which was receptive to a signal, a very specific signal, which has been since, like, destroyed and cannot be replicated, unless what's his face, the guy Hugh Darrow, decides to replicate it again.
Yeah,
because he's the only one that knew how. This is literal. This is, like, actually deactivating their augmented capabilities by force.
Yeah, that's the dampening part of that. Like, it's to dampen their augments and have them removed.
That's for people who have non-removable augmentations, like Malik from the first game had brain augments, which made her reactions quicker.
Yeah. So
those would be unremovable, so the chip would just deactivate them.
So yeah, but let's go back to discussing the similarities, because there's, you know, that act that is they're trying to bring in. So all of this stuff that you mentioned so far is, like, those are very direct parallels, clearly.
I mean, there's also the relocation of people into Column City.
Yep.
There was 3.5 million people forcibly relocated in South Africa. There's even a secret organization involved there.
Right. So
that was more like, wow.
So they have all of these things that are very similar, and you have your South African pilot, but it's never remarked upon, right?
No one notices.
Nobody's noticed that this has happened before.
Yeah.
So
it's like,
again, like, it's like with the thing with Gollum City, like, that's the name they're calling it, but they haven't noticed that what they're effectively doing here is making a Nazi analogy.
Yeah,
by rounding all these people up,
like
rounding them all up and putting them into a gulag, which is Gollum City, like that. And again, Gollum Jewish connotations,
right,
very obvious.
It's the sort of thing where in sci-fi, this kind of thing does happen a lot in sci-fi, where they reuse real world, you know, events and so on, but with a sci-fi appearance to them, with, you know, replacing different people. Like, if you want to, let's take a look at Star Trek, for example. Let's look at DS9, right? speaking of, like, the Bajorans, you know, being put into, you know, camps and herded up and rounded up by the Cardassians, right? There are a lot of real world things there. in sci-fi and in more speculative sci-fi where it's not, you know, Earth in 2029, they use these things and you can infer that, oh, these are the equivalent of the of Nelson Mandela and this is the equivalent of this thing. It's an equivalent, right, of those
things. Gold Ducat, literally Hitler.
Yeah, kind of things like that. In this, they're doing the same thing, but because it's set in 2029, it's weird that nobody noticed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's not like something you read in the history books. Your parents experienced it.
Well, it's 2016 now, and there are people still alive who experienced, you know, the oppression in the 60s in America and stuff.
Exactly.
So, cultural memory's not that short.
Not at all. And so, the fact that nobody notices that this is all very similar to things that have happened
before. Apart from the one old man who's like, okay, yeah, this one thing happened one time.
Actually, I've realized I didn't quite talk about what that was. It's like, Warsaw 1982... Basically, there's a very, very brief summary, but the communist government of Poland had crushed their opposition in 1981 and introduced martial law. And the oppositional movement, which was called Solidarity, was delegalized and its key members were put in, well, they were interned. And then in 1982, Solidarity reemerged and was an underground organization. And so there were protests on the street. There was all the martial law and all the lockdown. And the old guy's like, "Well, this is just like that." And you're like, "See, one guy freaking remembers."
I wish somebody who wasn't in a side quest that
in two side quests
you can miss and
twice.
That won't show up in the other one if you don't do a certain order of things.
Yeah, like if you have to choose to save him in the original side quest, and then you have to do the Samizdat side quest later on to get that piece of dialogue.
I did the second one, but not the first.
And he's the only person in the entire game that notices that it's similar to things that have happened before. So it's like, we want to tell this story, but we don't want to have the guts to actually talk about the fact that this has all happened before.
Yeah. So what we're really talking about. Everything is metaphorical because, effectively, in the Deus Ex universe, none of it's happened before. So we're basically left to infer that augmentations were created due to a complete lack of the Second World War, the Cold War.
all these other things.
The Jim Crow laws in America, all of that stuff. Like, none of those ever happened, and no one was ever oppressed, and everyone lived together happily until augmentations happened. And then it all went downhill.
Aside from Warsaw.
Apart from that,
still happened. So, yeah, ultimately, it feels a little bit hollow when it comes to all of that stuff.
It's to tie it back in, especially when they have, you know, taken real-world events to use in the marketing.
Yes.
Yeah, so...
Like that exacerbates the issue.
Mm. Marketing departments, let's be honest. Let's not put that on the
right. It was a terrible idea. That's always like a separate group.
Well, yeah.
But taken as a full experience, as a whole, it's hard to ignore.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, let's wrap things up. We've, you know, gone all over the place, which I think is fine. So to really sum it up, like we said, it feels hollow and like it was carved up to sell you the next game.
Yeah, I think if we're going to do the so what, I think that's, like you said, it feels carved up to make you basically buy the sequel. If you're going to make choices in games seem binary, please make them binary.
And if you want, consequently, if you want to give the players the freedom to do whatever, don't pretend that they are being given a binary choice.
Yes. And if you're going to talk about something, actually talk about it.
Well, let's phrase that differently. Let's say if you're going to talk about something, have something to say.
Yeah.
And then say it.
This game looks like it's going to have something to say, and then it doesn't.
That's way better than what
Jensen,
I just said.
You look like you have something to say. Do you? Yes, I certainly do. I have to go. My planet needs me. Jensen died on the way back to his home planet. That's this game. That's what this game does.
So we've run the gamut. We've gone from conspiracy theories in-game to conspiracy theories about the game. Is Jensen a clone?
Jensen was aliens.
What we do know for a fact about Jensen, though, was that he was captain of the debate team.
Yep.
I love that tiny little detail that shows up in a side quest. Like, okay.
All right.
Makes sense.
So yeah, it's like we said, if you're going to use all these themes, you should probably have something to say. Otherwise, it's just hot. Yeah. So yeah, there we go. That was first episode of Press X for Story about Deus Ex Mankind Divided. Let us know what you think. This is something I've wanted to do for a while, and we're trying it out now. And yeah, let us know what you think. What about the format? Would you rather we had a more structured thing? Is the discussion bouncing around, is that good? Did you agree with what we said? Did you disagree? Let us know. I'm sure there are plenty of people who actually have a lot more context for a lot of these things than we do.
Yes. Experiences that we are lacking.
Mm-hmm. So, and thank you to Red and Nav for joining me on this.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Basically, we were like, we should do something about this, because we were sat around, in Discord or whatever, chatting about all this stuff anyway. I have an idea that could fit this.
Turn it into a podcast.
I mean, yeah, I wanted to fit that into this. So there we go. All right. So, like I said, the schedule for this, who knows, it will come up when we have ideas to do stuff, and it will be me and any number of people, any guests, no guarantee of
who's going to be.
That might be on the list. No promises right now.
We'll see.
Yeah, we will see. So, yeah.
I'm presuming we talk for a full 24-hour period.
Yeah. Without stopping. Oh, God, I'm not editing that. All right, so if you want to find us around the web, you can find all my stuff at karmahats.co.uk and go to patreon.com/karmahats to support all of that. And Red, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Rednimer7, same on Twitch. And I stream on Sundays and Fridays, off and on, one week. Bi-weekly, which means once every 2 weeks.
I will hurt you. There will be physical pain involved.
Fortnightly.
Bi-weekly means twice a week.
It means both.
God damn it. Anyway.
And I do group streams with also these two guys.
Hey. If I bifurcate you, I cut you in two.
No, it means you cut him twice. No. And Nav, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter. I am at Navarin1, and I also show up around on the internet on other lovely people's various shows. I'm monthly on at Keeb42 on Twitter's Star Trek show, which we are recording tonight. But well, obviously, yep. you won't be hearing this in real time. So
we'll be heading off to go do that
shortly.
In a bit.
But yeah, that's once every month for Star Trek, and I also end up on Keeb streams of Firefly, the role-playing game which is fortnightly, with some other people, including there's a guy I think he's relevant in some way. He's probably dead.
No, he's not relevant. I don't think he's relevant at all.
I'm on that with Red, and that is on Keeb42's Twitch channel.
Yeah, do check
that
out.
Technically fortnightly, but we're on hiatus at the moment.
Yeah, because real life issues.
Because reasons. All right, well, there you go. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next time, whenever that is, for another episode of Press X for Story. And, bye-bye for now. Goodbye.
Woo!